brother.
God,
what's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother,
like
dig
it.
Solid. Right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I don't like newspapers. I don't care for inexactitude and shallowness.
Listen, hotshot, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
You know what you look like to me? You look like a rube. A wild scrub hustling rube.
You're just absolutely right. And I'm absolutely wrong. It must be nice to always believe you know better. To always think you're the smartest person in the room.
I love the hunt. It's all about the hunt.
We've got to get a fire in our ass.
This is your The Damage Control Continues. Leader Fan Radio Network.
Okay.
And KFAN.com. 2 minutes and 1 second past 3 Central Standard Time. Bumper to Bumper Show returns. 3.5 hour tour on a decidedly too warm for me here in mid-December, Friday afternoon in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My name is Dan Barrero. I host the program. Gardzi is along for the ride as well. If he's got anything left after having to do, was it the last hour?
Yeah,
of the program? Oh,
yeah.
Man. That's technically, if this were a union shop, the deal would be, somebody would have to replace you for an hour to give you a break between the two shows. If we were a union shop, I think.
Oh, is that true?
But then we'd have to find somebody to do that.
We don't have that.
And
person.
I don't think we have that level of depth right now, do we?
Well, Friday at 3 o'clock, even if we had that level of depth.
Ghost town.
Would they be
is.
Here Friday at 3?
Probably
no.
Not. Unlikely at best.
I actually think now I'm warmed up. You know, that was a warm-up
that's
show.
That's the way to look at
I'm
it.
I'm loose. I'm limber. I'm ready to roll.
I hope you're right about that.
I'm not easing into this show. I'm ready to go.
It's our own version of the Friday Football Feast. Much to get to regarding Vikings and Miami Dolphins. Ben Gessling generally joins us at 4:30 on Fridays to sort of give us proper distance between some of our guests. He has agreed to move to his time slot to 4:55 today, which means you have been gracious enough to move the top five at five to the 5:20 sports fix. Picks are scheduled with Gerby at the bottom of the hour. That could be very entertaining, I think, today. It's very clear that he likes everybody being distracted about the elephant in the room regarding the Packers, which is they're not very good and they need a new coach. By spending more time on our controversies, getting in on some of the stuff that is creating schisms here in the Minnesota football community. So I'm expecting he'll get to some of that at 3:30. And at 3:55 today, John Feinstein will join a name that probably needs not much of an introduction. He's got another new book out on, and it's NFL related actually, called The Quarterback, I think. Or is it just Quarterback? Is there even a The?
I think it's The Quarterback.
The Quarterback. And he centers it around five National Football League quarterbacks. I think four current and one former in a lot of different areas. And it is getting some very nice reviews, as John's books usually do. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And I'm guessing I'm going to try to find out if he's seen or has any thoughts on the Bob Knight documentary, 30 for 30, documentary that's sort of been in, is now in re-release, one could say, that we were discussing, I believe, 2 days ago here on this very program. I mentioned off the top of the show that we are indeed your The Damage Control Continues leader. It's been a big damage control week for the Minnesota Vikings, as you know. Team struggling offensively, team continuing to lose and generally not be all that competitive at times against teams with winning records. And yes, most of those games have been on the road. And yes, we had a first place schedule, but you're allowed to every once in a while shock the world, and we haven't shocked the world ever. And then we allowed the world to shock us when Buffalo came to town and killed us. And again, you look at the overall season and you say those are the kinds of losses from which this team really has never fully recovered. Might they start a little stretch now where they feel better about themselves? Quite possibly. It's a very beatable Miami team. Miami has something to play for, but they're very beatable. They've been extremely beatable on the road. They have been semi-impressive at home. They had the miracle victory over New England. They came from behind to beat the Bears in Miami as well. They may have one other significant home win, but bottom line is that there's been a lot of damage control. There's been a lot of alibiing. There's been, one could suggest, some scapegoating that's taken place as well. The latest guy to go, of course, is the offensive coordinator, and is that about really him? Possibly. Or is it about desperation that you don't really know what the hell else to do, and you see your season's about to come apart even in a relatively soft wild card competition for the in the NFC, and you say we got to try something. I mean, we got to give something a shot, and we really can't bench the starting quarterback. That's really not useful or viable at this juncture. We can't find a bunch of new offensive linemen at this late date as well, so we're kind of stuck with what we've been messing with there. So let's get rid of one guy. Won't cost us as much money, and let's see. Maybe this other guy will strike gold. Maybe he'll figure something out. Maybe the players will get re-energized in some way because they'll be embarrassed about what had happened previously. All those theories, when you're desperate enough, all of them look good, right? And possibly your coordinator has stubbed his toes a couple of times as well, which is certainly possible. And so it's really this week is about changing the subject, damage control, that guy's fault, this guy did it, and sometimes it is that guy's fault, but not, Ben Gesslinger, we're going to talk to, as I said, at 4:55, has a really good piece online right now. I don't know if it was in today's paper or not. I saw it online, and I get the paper at home, but I don't know if I saw it there or it has been filed since. And it's an old subject, one could say, but it's laid out with great specificity about some of the offseason decisions, including decisions about the offensive line, that one could argue represents the chickens. Well, we can't say the chickens coming home to roost. Wait a minute. What does the expression chickens coming home to roost mean?
Let me look it up.
Because maybe it's actually, in that case, PETA wouldn't mind because it's good for the chickens to have a chance to come home to roost. What does roosting mean?
They'd like them to roost.
Chickens coming home to roost means what?
It says the older, fuller form was curses are like chickens. They always come home to roost, meaning that your offensive words or actions are likely at some point to rebound on you.
But what does a chicken roosting mean?
That's a great question. What does roosting mean for the chicken?
I guess that would be another way to put it.
What is that?
Yeah, do we know?
I don't. Somebody could tell us.
I don't think it's bad for the chicken, is it? In this case, don't chickens revel in roosting?
Or to spend a long time sitting?
Oh, yeah. So that's PETA might say that one, that expression's okay, right? Because that's not saying, like, you know, eat crow.
No.
That's, you know, they had a list of
yes,
the ones
they
said were sending the wrong message in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That one might be fine. But you get my point, the chickens coming home to roost, that the line issues keep rearing their heads, and that, in fact, some of the debate and the difficulty for any coordinator in figuring out how to attain the highest level of efficiency in this offense this year might well be related to how do I minimize my offensive line issues. That isn't necessarily about being stupid as a coordinator, but it could very well be, well, that makes it hard for anybody to figure out what's the right calibration that's going to work. Yes, we had better success early, but at what cost? We gave up some turnovers. The quarterback was getting pounded more often. How much can we afford that? That's all laid out, I think, very nicely in the piece, and it even gets some draft stuff, which we will discuss with Gesling at, as I said, at 4:55 today. But the damage control I'm talking about in this case is newer and special teams related. Did you read about it?
I did.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Mark Craig's, I think it was a notebook, series of notebook items, place kicking related. And by the time you get done reading it, you're left once again with the, man, they must be having a sale on passing the buck and making excuses over at TCO Performance Center. Because now we come to find out that Mike Prefer knew all along that Daniel Carlson was going to be better. He was going to reinvent himself, as he has at least to this point, in Oakland, California, with the Raiders. They're not in Vegas yet, right?
Not yet.
They're still in Oakland. He, as you recall with us, was released the morning after he went 0-for-3, missed a 35-yarder as overtime expired in that deadly 29-29 tie at Green Bay. Of course, what's often forgotten is that we should have lost that game.
Game was over.
The game was over.
Yeah.
Interception was thrown, and the referees bailed out the Vikings, but we didn't look at it that way when we cut him. So he's with the Raiders. He's he hasn't missed an extra point yet. He's 1-for-1 from 50 yards or more, and 3-for-3 from 39 yards. I think he's missed one kick. Isn't it like 9-for-10? Something like that.
He's 90%.
Okay. So Prefer is asked about it. Doesn't surprise me. Some of the things I know they've been talking about with this technique, that's what we did here.
Excuse me?
His approach was really long when he got here, and we worked really hard all spring and all summer long on making him a compact approach. Well, obviously, they didn't work hard enough on it. Right? I mean, but isn't the implication, again, don't blame us.
We did.
Don't blame me. We did. We made all the adjustments.
We asked him.
And we did as much as we could. And so if it happened to be working in Oakland, it's just because it's coincidence. Now, in fairness to Prefer, I seem to remember a quote from Carlson about not being willing to make as much of an adjustment here as he was there or has been there. Once you get cut, maybe you feel like, hey, I got nothing to lose. And I think he talked to his longtime coach. Nevertheless, part of your job as the coordinator, I think, is insisting, saying we can't mess around with this. Now, you could argue that they cut him so fast, there was no time to make that adjustment. Then we come to find out that we even have excuses that aren't our fault for why Blair Walsh went from one of the best kickers in football at the start to a name now that, among many others, lives in infamy for Minnesota Vikings fans, right? And is still out of the league, I think. Blair Walsh lost too much weight. Blair Walsh, according to Prefer, was trying to be more fit. And when he lost the weight, he lost his strength. He lost his strength, he changed his technique, and it wasn't as successful.
Excuse me?
That's something I tried to stop and didn't get it stopped. Don't blame me. I knew exactly. The first day, he told me he was going on the high-carb diet.
Mm-hmm.
Low-carb diet.
Yeah.
Well, there might be a high-carb diet fashion.
That's what I'm on, unfortunately. Is it the keto diet? That's the big one right now.
Whichever it is.
Yeah.
He knew. He told Blair, you're going to lose all your strength, kid. You can't do it.
And he did it.
Yet he did it, and so we couldn't stop him. Don't blame us. So that's in fashion, apparently, right now at TCO Performance Center, whether it's the head coach or it's anybody else around the organization. Don't blame us. We were way ahead of it. We knew exactly. Like, when we hired DeFilippo, we knew exactly how dangerous a hire it was. We knew there was a really good chance we were going to have to get rid of him. And so desperate to do it, we might have to do it during the season as opposed to after the season. And now we find out again where it's not our fault on either of the kickers, Carlson or Blair. We knew it all along. If you know it all along and you aren't able to influence these guys the right way, whether, quite frankly, you're talking about kickers or play calling, sooner or later you go, well, we got some issues we got to deal with at the top here too, don't we? That's what I would suggest. But that's just me, and I am negative.
It's a Purple Friday on The Fan, presented by the Greater Twin Cities Honda Dealers.
Guardsy, right back with you, and we are right in the middle of the real driving season, the holiday season. You're driving to the malls to shop. You're driving to the kids' holiday programs. You're driving to see family, and don't forget, weather, especially here, not exactly stellar this time of year. So you need a car you can count on to get where you're going, and our friends at Chevy have the options you need. They've won the J.D. Power Dependability Award for a third year in a row. Doesn't get more reliable than that. That's an indication that Chevy is the vehicle you want to take on the road for the holidays and beyond. Don't spin your wheels. Chevy's already got everything you could want. Test drive a new Chevy today.
Hey, it's Hockey here for Gretchen Hall Law Offices. If you've been hurt at work, you have a workers' compensation claim. Workers' compensation is a sophisticated process. You need somebody on your side who understands and can help you recover the benefits that you deserve. Visit ghalllaw.com and Gretchen Hall will fight for you. She'll create an effective strategy to pursue wage loss and, in the end, get you the money you deserve. She can also anticipate arguments and tricks that the insurance companies use for denials and for minimizing payments. Visit ghalllaw.com. That's ghalllaw.com.
KFAN Total Traffic.
From the Holiday Station Stores Traffic Center, here's a look at the roads. Good news on northbound 169. They cleared a crash at Highway 7. On the crosstown westbound, approaching Highway 100, we've got a stall blocking the right lane. Traffic is heavy from Lindale. Eastbound 494, slow from East Bush Lake to Penn. Still have an accident. Westbound Highway 36 at 35E on the right shoulder. Traffic heavy from Highway 61. That's Traffic on the Fan, sponsored by your closest 88-octane fuel station at mnfuels.com. The next time you fill up your tank, use 88-octane fuel. It's an upgrade from regular 87-octane, giving your engine a boost. Plus, it costs less. Look for the yellow 88-octane sticker at the pump or visit mnfuels.com for a station near you.
You know what everybody needs right now, Gargi?
Love, sweet love.
A win on Sunday. Everybody's cranky.
Yeah.
Everybody's testy. Everybody's trying to explain this and explain that. So, you're at home. You're playing a team you're supposed to beat. I think they do have a winning record, which would be
7-6.
Historic for us if we could win one this year against a team with a winning record. But that's exactly that. That by the end of a thorough romp over the Dolphins, several of us will be saying that the Vikings are the postseason team nobody wants to play. That's how it works. Pick segment coming up at 3:30. And may I add, as foreshadowing, I have a sneaking suspicion. Or is it sneaky suspicion?
I like sneaky suspicion.
Let's just go with suspicion. That the Green Bay Packers are going to go into Soldier Field and beat the Bears.
Excuse me?
Just a hunch. Just a hunch. Just a feel I have.
Can I give you something that might change your mind?
Well, I think our nickel, the Bears' nickel corner, is now officially out for the season. And that's a big loss for them, but go ahead.
Sinekin just tweeted out 10 minutes ago, Brian Bulaga officially doubtful for Sunday's matchup against Khalil Mack.
They might have 9 sacks in the first half, then you're right.
As Davey writes, replacement Jason Spriggs expected to be added to the injury report with gastrointestinal distress.
Oh! I love that line. It's a good one. Yeah, well, that might turn me around right there. It's very possible.
I think we'll talk. It's a game we're obviously going to pick for the pick segment. I think the Bears are favored by 6.5.
That's correct. It's a lot of points.
It is.
Within the division.
It is. But then the more I thought, we'll talk about it during the picks. I'm feeling pretty confident the Bears are going to win that game pretty comfortably.
Yesterday or the day before, I caught up with it late last night. A tweet from Andrew Kramer, among those who cover the Vikings for the Star Tribune. Zimmer asked why he kept Stefanski on staff in 2014, quote, I'm not going to talk anymore about that. If you want to talk about Miami, if you want to talk about the football team, I'll talk about that. I'm not going to talk about Stefanski and the coordinators or anything else. Which, as a very smart tweeting listener pointed out, was sort of Zimmer's version of Tampa Bay, the time when my questioning of Denny Green ended with that comment and him walking out of the interview room. This was back at the old Winter Park days, going way, way, way back, obviously. And I got in on some of the fun.
Tampa Bay.
That's the thing. Reminding folks that it's sad what a difficult job Zim has. How he's constantly forced to be on the defensive by these media jackals who are constantly pushing him against a wall symbolically, questioning him, tweaking, trying to get him going, needling, bullying, the whole bit. And I'm not interested in, you can believe this or not believe it. I could not care less, selfishly speaking, whether Zim answers this question or any other question at a podium, after a game, or whatever. My ship has sailed on that. I'm not at the, thankfully, at the mercy of getting quote unquote quotes from Mike Zimmer to fill up my notebook or fill up my radio show. That's not the key to the existence. So for the people who want to say, you guys are, you know, so sensitive about it because you really want, and one guy said, well, you're just mad because he won't go on the show. First of all, there was no declaration that he wouldn't go on the show. We had a decent relationship. He decided he didn't want to have that weekly burden. Fine, I can respect that. That's not a problem for me. But there's nothing selfish about my view. That the notion that there was a single thing wrong with that question is preposterous. It's ridiculous. And to even pretend that that's the sort of badgering question that no coach should have to put up with is absurd. You make the move, and you have every right to do it as a head coach. It might save your season. Because ultimately, it's about you and saving your own rear end. You can do whatever you need to do, but if you fire your coordinator 13 games at least, into a season, with 3 games left to go, having fallen to 6-6-1, then it's a story. And people are going to be interested in, and the question isn't necessarily negative. The question doesn't necessarily mean you're saying, how do you explain that? In fact, it could be a head coach's opportunity to say, well, now do you see why I did what I did? I wanted a little buffer. I had a lot of respect for Stefanski, and as he has said once before, I stuck with these guys when we were struggling. So, yeah, I selfishly said, yeah, I want them around. There's 100 ways you could answer it at which you might not get ridiculed, mocked at all. But the notion that, well, they won't let up. The media jackals just won't. I mean, they won't even let him breathe. They're suffocating Mike Zimmer. Is preposterous. It's ridiculous. And that's why a few of us have mocked it, ridiculed it. And believe me, I've not been shy about mocking media questions or approaches or strategies either. So this isn't about, well, media guy, stand up. It's like, no, it's just the exasperation that this head coach has about really the single, to this point, most important decision that he's made since the start of the season, right? Because you just don't do this on good teams.
No.
Not very often.
Doesn't happen very much.
It might happen on teams with horrible records. It doesn't happen on teams who still think they're in the deal and might end up saving the season. You can spin it any way you want. But there was nothing wrong with the question. It wasn't, you know, some sort of, you know, they're looking for clicks. There's nothing wrong with it at all. So that's the only reason I bring it up again.
Well, and looking for clicks is different than doing something sensational. Otherwise, compared to typically when you hire an offensive coordinator, You've got some kind of press conference, let's say. You've got some time because it's usually in the off season.
Correct.
I'm guessing they're just trying to write a story about Kevin Stefanski. Who is this guy? We've heard his name for years. He's been around. He's a quarterback's coach. He used to be Brad Childress's assistant 15 years ago. And now he's the OC. Let's get a little bit more depth into that. I mean, that's a pretty typical story, right?
Yeah, the story's typical. The specific question is not related to that, but it is related to, well, let's remember, you chose to go the way you did. And we said at the time, it wasn't unprecedented. The blocking was not unprecedented. You could say it was unfair, but it had been done before.
Yeah.
But you just don't be surprised it's going to come up again at the point where you decide to blow up your offensive coordinator and replace him this late, that it's very much a part of the story. Okay. Let's go back and think about it. Was it the notion that, well, that's ancient news? No, it's not ancient. You made this news again by the decision you made. So you don't have to answer it. Just don't act put upon. That's all. You're not abused. You're not put upon. You are, in fact, I think, less scrutinized than several of the last four Vikings coaches, frankly. And you could argue for good reason, because largely things have, after the mess he inherited defensively, they've become better. Okay. That's all fair. I understand all that too. But I just the idea that then at the point where there's some struggles going on it was going good, he got praised a lot. Mike Zimmer got praised a lot.
People love the guy.
It wasn't like people ignored him, like, well, it's just happening in spite of Zimmer. He's got nothing to do with it. But that's the situation we're in. And we got Rubes who then on a tweet, like, oh, you guys in the media, you're all so sensitive about it. You just can't have the sensitive guy is the head coach. He's the one being sensitive. The idea that he's just trying to get his team ready for the next game. You can get, I said it before, I'll say it again, you can get your team ready for the next game, several other levels of the game of football, and you won't have to be badgered by anybody. But you want to do it here, in this visibility, then there's going to be questions that are going to be asked. And I saw nothing to indicate that, like I said, there was badgering going on or smart alecky questions or efforts to get him going. Prediction segment next.
You're listening to Barrero on the Fan.
About to fly by. This is indeed your flyby leader. We're a little behind. My clock management, very similar to Mike McCarthy's, one could say. But we're going to try to get through the picks segment. Let's not even bother with the music. I will mention, and this is the important part, Gerby and the prediction segment, as always, brought to you by our good friends downstairs at Continental Diamond. Cannot salute them, recommend them highly enough. Mr. Gerbschmidt, are you indeed ready to get started here? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. I was talking, but no one could hear me.
Are you familiar with, are you a big Mungo Jerry guy?
The name sounds familiar.
In the summertime? Do you have that song on your iPad?
I could look it up. Maybe I do.
Alexa, maybe?
See if Alexa can get it for you.
Yeah, I took it out of the office because she was annoying the crap out of me.
Really?
Yes, well, there's a lady in the office whose name is Lexi.
Yes.
If you just kind of say it fast, all of a sudden Alexa's saying that she has no idea what the hell I'm talking about.
You didn't say anything.
I don't need to be insulted by a machine, okay?
You didn't say anything inappropriate, though, that got Lexi upset. Okay, I just want to be sure.
Look, as a matter of fact, today, I know that you don't have a lot of time, which is good, because I'm busy planning the holiday party for the office.
Oh, my God.
I've never done it before. I know it's hard to believe because I might be the most fun guy here. I got a plan. It's kind of a pain in the butt. I mean, it's like there's all sorts of rules and regulations. We're not doing on site, okay? Because they said that's a bad idea to have alcohol in the office.
Don't put up any mistletoe either.
No, we're going to a place called The Pickle.
The Pickle.
It's on Water Street in Eau Claire.
Okay, The Pickle.
And so I'd never been there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm looking at the reviews on Yelp.
What does it say?
Well, let's just call them mixed.
Right. Well, too late probably to change
it's
now.
It's a good college bar. And
yeah.
This building was a filthy bleep hole in 1988.
Oh, man.
Bring lots of hand sanitizer.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a college bar.
This place is so disgusting. It has airborne STDs.
Aren't you asking?
That's not nice.
No, but aren't you, if it's a college bar, aren't you asking for trouble in terms of the age of the...
This is a part that I had no control over.
Okay, well.
So apparently it's a trade-out or something.
Okay.
I don't understand how we're trading it out. I don't know what service that the Department of Transportation is. You would think that we would have a large enough budget for us to throw our own damn party.
Do you consider yourself a patriot?
First time going to the pickle, it will also be my last, is what somebody says.
Well, good luck at the pickle.
Yeah, there's a couple good ones in here. It says that the beer is good, and it says it's by far the most fun bar in the Midwest.
Yeah, that's dangerous too for an employee. You know, business.
State government lost.
You got. You probably don't.
No, but
get out to a lot of them.
So it's got lawsuit written all over it, Carl.
Then I'm reading the things that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Office holiday party etiquette.
Well, you can't do anything. That's the whole point.
Says don't drone on about work. Don't gossip or badmouth your colleagues.
Yeah.
Don't get drunk. Oh, what the hell?
Have you thought about canceling?
Don't post photos or comments that could get you in trouble.
Yeah.
What does that leave?
Well,
is that what you're suggesting?
Well, you know.
Yeah, doesn't leave a lot of options, does it?
Here's the thing here. 25 easy Christmas party games. Wow. I had already planned a couple of them. One was going to be Pack of Charades, where we act out various plays in the history of the Packers.
That's brilliant.
Excuse me? People would know that stuff.
Well, no doubt, in your town, in your part, neck of the woods.
We had planned it earlier, but now it's even funnier. It's now Mike McCarthy Mad Libs. We take one of his post-game speeches and we insert funny words.
Man, you guys are turned.
That's so
Super
sad. Now you're turning on him.
Funny?
No, it's not funny. It's cruel.
How about touch your nose to Rudolph's nose?
That's,
you know, they blindfold you and you got to walk up to the wall and touch Rudolph's nose?
That's fraught with risk about where your hands end up other than Rudolph's nose.
Well, I don't think it... First of all, Dan, try to grow up, okay?
No,
you know,
I'm being
not
serious.
Everybody is a sickie like
I'm not saying that it's a sickie. You're asking for trouble.
You use these as opportunities. You know, it's grope fest with Barrero, but, you know, it's that's not how other people behave.
At holiday parties? Yeah, that's me.
I wouldn't know because I've never been to one of I Love Radio holiday parties.
Would you consider yourself a patriot?
A patriot?
Yeah.
He's not a patriot.
Why?
Not like a New England patriot.
Well, apparently there's some Packer fans who aren't.
What do you mean?
Before Sunday's Packers-Falcons game in Green Bay, the singer of the national anthem appeared to skip ahead in the lyrics, then used filler words over part of the song. That's disrespectful.
Who was that?
I don't know, but you had him there.
What if they're from out of town?
His name is, let's see what his name is, see if I can find it. Frank Hermans is his name. And I think he's from Beloit.
Really?
Yep.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's very bad. It's embarrassing. It's what it is. It's not patriotic.
That's something to be embarrassed about.
You probably were too drunk to even notice that he skipped over some of the words.
A lot of times I don't sit down until right before the game starts.
Yeah, figured.
So, you know, because you got to make sure you have an adequate supply of booze, you know?
Yeah, right.
And usually that's not an issue. Boy, there was a guy last time, and he was flaunting it. He was posting it on social media.
Really?
That he had smuggled in, like, this giant bag full of booze. And it was like...
What kind of booze was it, you know?
It struck me that it was some... It looked like whiskey or something.
Whiskey,
sort.
Yeah, sure.
But he had, like, it was like a 2-gallon bag.
Oh, my God.
Like that. Now, that's...
That's dangerous.
That's ambitious even for me.
That's dangerous is what it is. Look at
Do
these...
Do you think that we should have, like, a Secret Santa thing going at our holiday party, Dan? What would you get someone if, let's say you had a party and you were invited.
Right.
So it's a hypothetical.
Right.
And what would you get, like, a gift for Dan from Woodbury?
That's a good question.
I was thinking, like, a mirror.
Wow. That's...
Because he likes himself.
He does like himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything as cheap.
That's why you don't get invited, Dan. You can't come up with gift ideas.
No. Speaking of Secret Santa, who do you think Aaron has in the Rogers family Secret Santa this year?
Danica.
Well, that's
not the family.
No, that's not Secret Santa. That's his gal. You think he's got Jordan?
I don't think that Jordan would be invited to Aaron's.
Mom or dad?
I'm sure he gives him something nice. I mean, he's got a lot of money. He probably, you know, drops off a check and says, have a nice day.
That's that's kind of chilly.
We have to make the playoffs.
That's kind of cold. Won't play the last two games.
I don't even know. Is he going to play on Sunday?
Of course he's playing on Sunday. We're gonna beat the Bears.
Look at the standings, by the way. Gerby and I each went 3-0.
Yeah.
Gardsey went 2-1. So now Gardsey's made it up to 500. That's third place.
That took a long time, too.
Gerby 23-19. I'm 25-17-1. We actually have legit records now. And we've got three games to get to.
You've been lucky and you're not rigging it against me anymore.
Is that what it is?
There's no question.
Yeah. Patriots are on the road, favored by 2.5 over the occasionally.
You know, you can get candy corn and green, red, and white. I'm looking online.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Did you find Mungo Jerry?
I'm sorry, I got distracted by the party.
Oh, there it is. Oh, yeah. It's a classic. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Patriots favored by 2.5. Now it's in stereo.
What is the point of this song?
I don't know. I had it in my head. You know how sometimes you get a song in your head? Plus, I like saying Mungo Jerry for whatever reason.
Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know what it means.
Yeah, I had a song in my head, too.
What was it?
I know you don't have much time for that.
You going to play that at the holiday party? You think they play that at the Pickle?
I bet they do.
Yeah.
Gardsey, Patriots.
I like to have rap music.
Fared by 2.5 over the Steelers in Pittsburgh.
I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game. I don't know why. I have no great reason for it. So I know I'm not really giving you much there. New England.
You're just making up a name because Pittsburgh sounds like more fun?
I don't know if it sounds like more fun. I think New England and Foxborough, it's a nice place. It's a nice community. But
it's hard to win there.
It is.
It's not in Foxborough. It's in Pittsburgh.
It's in Pittsburgh.
Hard to win there.
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Steelers at home there. That line surprises me a little bit.
Gerby?
Well, it's a tough one because New England is still fighting for home field advantage.
Correct.
If they get home field advantage, they're going to go to Super Bowl. I just think that Pittsburgh has got some flaws that do I have to really give up points if I take New England?
Yeah, 2.5.
I think they're going to win by a field goal. I'll take New England.
I'm going to take New England as well. I think the Steelers just might have been finally exposed. They're up, they're down. I know people like to hang with them and they surprise you and, you know, they're playing at home and they're coming off an embarrassing performance on the road. Didn't they just lose last week?
Yeah.
I'm gonna take New England to take care of business there.
No, wait, you guys have both seen Randy, right? I mean, you guys have met him, right?
Yeah, we know Randy.
So
yes.
Do you think he would be a good Santa substitute at a party?
As long as there's no children there.
Is Randy the attorney?
There's no children.
Is Randy the attorney? No, that's Vern.
Mark's
the attorney. Yeah. That's
Vern's
right.
The
Vern's the in Los Angeles in the porn industry.
You guys seem to think so. I don't have any evidence that that's the case at all.
I'm not saying it makes him a bad person.
Have you watched some movies that had his name on it?
Well, I mean, couple of his pen names, yes.
I think our morning show watches a few of them.
Yeah, that's possible.
Hawk likes it, I think.
Because I can't find him listed in any of the directing things. So
what does Randy do, by the way?
Because apparently Gershman is hard to spell.
Not really.
Yeah.
That's not all.
Let's keep it moving. Bears at home, favored by 6.5 over Carl's Green Bay Packers team. Green Bay, to have any chance to stay in it, literally has to win this ball game. We'll start with Gardner.
They will not win the game. I don't think it's going to be close. I think the Bears have the Ubuntu, Dan, that we always talk about. They've got it rolling right now. They're feeling good about themselves. The defense is obviously spectacular. Trubisky will throw like 3 interceptions. That'll make it interesting. When they're trying to put the game away, he'll make a terrible throw, but then the Bears will get it right back. That's just how it works. I picked the Bears to cover that 6.5.
Carl, it's a lot of points.
We've lost 7 games already.
And Bulaga's out, right? You heard that, right? He's not playing.
I heard he's not. He hasn't been playing real well the last couple of years. He's been injured. We got a lot of things stacking against us. Aaron still feels pain. And when it's cold outside, he feels it even worse.
It's not going to be that cold.
We got a new coach.
Mid-40s, no win.
In the world are going against us. It's like, how could we ever possibly win this game?
It's a fair question.
But I tell you how we can win this game. It's because we're destined. We have destiny on our side.
You do?
And, yeah, here's the deal. You think the Bears care? They don't care. They know they're not, no one's going to catch them for the division. There's There's no chance that anybody's going to catch them for the division. So they're going to kind of relax. They're going to take their foot off the pedal. And, you know, and all we got to do is sneak in there and hang out. And you're right, because that Trubisky, that guy just, you know, I never seen anybody throw the ball around like that. You know, well, because he doesn't throw it backwards like certain people do. But, you know, he throws it all over the place. And I think we're going to pick him off a couple times, run a couple back. Mm. And guess what? We're still alive for the playoffs. We're still going to make the playoffs. I know how much it frightens everyone in Minnesota to hear this, but it's a fact. We are going to make the playoffs. Certainly, we're going to make the playoffs before Minnesota does. No question.
So you're saying that the
we will
Packers
absolutely win this game.
We'll cover.
Flat out. We're going to win the game.
You're not going to win, but you are going to cover. It's too many points. 6.5 is way too many points, especially if Trubisky, as Garzy suggests, throws 3 interceptions. I will pick the Packers to cover, not to win.
Yeah, but you secretly know they're going to win.
This is just
your way of saying it.
Before the show, early in the show, I had said I had a sneaking suspicion your team was going to win, and then he reminded me that Bulaga's out, and your backup there, I don't think has ever played in the National Football League, and so they might have
Jason Spriggs.
They might have 11 sacks at the half.
Games in the football.
He's not very good, though.
He's very good. Second-round draft choice, Dan.
Vikings favored by 7.5. Over the Miami Dolphins, Garcia.
The Vikings will run 34 times for 68 yards and win 17-10. They will not cover the 7.5.
Kirby?
They're not even going to win the game.
What?
Here's the thing, is that Minnesota has to lose 2 more games.
Yeah.
This is one of them.
Well, that, so you're
because
saying it's what...
It turns out Minnesota's going to lose 3 more games.
So you're saying it's what you want to have happen.
It's not what's going on. Dan, I'm just talking about what reality is, Dan. Is that Miami's hot. Did you see that they won last week? They won the game.
Well,
it was a miracle.
Yeah, it was kind of
That's like, that's going to happen. That sort of thing is the team of destiny. That's
not really.
They're like us. We're a team of destiny, and Miami's.
They're terrible on the road.
But Minnesota's terrible, period. Hmm. Minnesota, honestly, you could put the entire Griff Schmidt family, you couldn't block us. And your quarterback is so panicked, he's so nervous, he just throws the ball all over the place, and he's going to give it up. He throws better backwards than forwards, and it's like you guys have forgotten your wide receivers, and your defense did not look good last week. There's no way. You're going to lose this game, you're going to lose next week to Detroit, and you're going to lose to end the season, and guess who's going to have a better record when the season's over? Green Bay.
Dolphins will cover. Vikings will win. I'm not sure it'll be the kind of... we'll take it at this point, I'm sure, because the Vikings just have to get a victory. But I don't think it's going to be one where we come out of it going, wow, we finally figured it out. It was all on the coordinator, and we're about to take off.
Do you guys have the lyrics to Feliz Navidad there?
Probably.
We'll get them for you next week.
Hey, emailer Zach, the pickle is the most fun ever.
Oh, good!
Scott writes, went to school in Eau Claire. That bar is rough. So be prepared for some brawls, apparently.
Well, you're dealing with a DOT, baby.
Yeah.
By definition,
tough
I think...
chicks who are for the DOT.
The Gerbschmitts, by definition, are always ready for a brawl.
Well, my whole fan's not going to be there. The only way Randy is there...
If he's Santa.
Is Vern flying in?
No, Vern's not coming back for Christmas this year.
You're kidding.
I don't know. He's got, like, a convention.
Is it an Aaron Rodgers kind of thing that he doesn't like the rest of the family?
No, we like Vern just fine.
No, it is once. No, that wasn't my point. Is it possible Vern doesn't like you?
Vern got me Jennifer Lawrence's autograph.
Really?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
So he knows a lot of the big stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's well established in Southern California.
Because a lot of people don't understand that she doesn't spell her name the same way it looks like, and when it's in the press.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you might have been duped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're pretty sure.
Don't try to sell it.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't try to have that autograph authenticated because you might be disappointed. We don't have time either because we've got John Feinstein on the other side of a pause.
You're listening to Barrero on the Fan.
Ben Gessling will join top of the 5 o'clock hour, probably about 4:55 or so. Plenty of Vikings conversation at that point. Our next guest, John Feinstein, we've had on, I don't know how many times over the years, often to talk about one of his books. We've gotten into some other issues with him as well. And as it turns out on this occasion, this being a kind of a pro football emphasis day for obvious reasons in this town, the subject is professional football, because that's the subject of John Feinstein's latest book. It's called Quarterback. And he is kind enough to join us on the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline. Welcome to the program. I'm glad we were able to make the proper connections. And
so am I, Daniel. I will not bore you with the details of what goes on sometimes in public relations offices and for publishers.
By the way,
it can be frustrating for an author. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, because it's pretty important to get the word out, I'm sure. I mean, even with a name that is well established, especially during the holiday season, I'm sure you say, well, let's circulate a little bit. And I know you have a number of other places. We're glad you're doing it with us. The rest of the title of the book, Quarterback's just the short part. Inside
right.
The most important
That's
position.
That's the clever part.
Very clever. In the National Football League, you pick five quarterbacks that you spend a lot of time with. I think four of them current, one former. Tell us a little bit, before we get into some of the specific folks that you center this book around, what brought you to this particular subject and sort of what the goal was, given, as you know, there's a lot of books out about NFL quarterbacks.
There are. And as you may or may not remember, I wrote a book 14 years ago called Next Man Up. I'm pretty sure you had me on the show to talk about it.
Correct.
I spent the year with the Baltimore Ravens. Their quarterback that year, you may or may not remember, most people don't, was a guy named Kyle Bowler, who had been a first-round draft pick coming out of Cal, and he was supposed to be the franchise quarterback that every team is looking for. And Bowler was not a terrible quarterback. He's a great guy, by the way, but he wasn't good enough. He wasn't good enough to take a team into the playoffs, deep into the playoffs, to another Super Bowl. The Ravens had won one with Trent Dilfer at quarterback 4 years earlier, but that had been basically built around arguably the greatest defense in history, statistically the greatest defense in history. And I spent a lot of time with Kyle that year and was struck by how, I'm not sure tortured is too strong a word, but how tortured he was by not being good enough. And by the way he was treated in that town. And I'm not saying he was mistreated. I mean, it comes with the territory if you're a quarterback that if the team isn't successful, the Ravens were 9-7 that year. They weren't exactly awful, but they missed the playoffs. If a team isn't successful, usually the bulk of the blame comes down on the quarterback. I know you guys have been asking questions all year about was Kirk Cousins worth all this money? I'm sure that's a subject for debate on your show every single day.
Correct.
And so in spending all that time with Kyle, I was struck by how hard it is to be an NFL quarterback, both in terms of trying to be good enough, because there aren't that many that are really good, and dealing with all the pressures and dealing with failure and dealing with taking the brunt of the blame when things don't work out. And that sort of stayed in my mind for a long time. And, I was batting ideas around with my publisher, which 2 years ago now. And I suddenly said, what if I wrote a book about playing quarterback in the NFL? Knowing, A, you're right, that there have been plenty of books done on quarterbacks, usually individually.
Mm-hmm.
And B, knowing that my publisher's a big NFL fan and he might like the idea. he did. And so the question was then, how do you find a way to write the book so it is different than some of the other books that have been done on quarterbacks? And my approach was to not necessarily go after the five best quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, I knew Brady wouldn't talk, and even if he did talk, I think he's something of a savant. And I'm not saying that as a
no.
put-down. I think he's a football
yes.
genius.
Correct.
I don't think he's a genius off the field. So I went looking for guys who I knew were smart people, because you've read enough of my books, Dan, to know that I am dependent on my sources to be smart enough to understand why I'm asking the questions I'm asking and to be willing to answer them in great detail. And a lot of guys are naturally cautious with those of us in the media. You remember being a reporter, right?
It's been a while, but yes, I kind of do, actually.
Yeah. I like to say that to Kornheiser, because it upsets him.
Yes.
But so I put together a wish list. There are probably 15 names on the list, and then began to whittle it down, in part because, for example, I met with Aaron Rodgers, who I think is very smart, and I thought he was going to do it. And I think in the end he said no because of all the controversy surrounding his family, his relationship with his family.
Yep.
And, you know, he asked me at one point, and he said, well, who would you talk to besides me? And I said, well, I'd look to you for a lot of guidance. I would assume McCarthy. I would assume your offensive coordinator, and I would assume your quarterback's coach, and anybody else you said was important. And he said, well, that's good, because if you talk to my family, you're not going to get the truth.
Mm. Interesting.
And I said to him, half joking, well, no, not jokingly, the only person in your personal life I'd really like to talk to is Olivia Munn, because he was dating her. And he laughed, actually, and said, well, I can't blame you for that. But I really think he felt that I would almost be obligated to mention that, because it is part of his life.
True, yeah.
What's
going
on what's been going on with him and his family, and it just popped up again recently, as you know. So I ended up with Joe Flacco, who I knew because of my relationship with the Ravens, and I knew he was smart. I ended up with Alex Smith. I got to give Michael Wilbon credit for that, because he told me Alex was one of the smart, good guys in the league. And fortunately, I had a connection to the Chiefs through Bob Sutton, who used to be the yep. coach at Army, who hooked me up with Alex. I ended up with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who I wanted right from the beginning, because I figured if you graduated from Harvard, you can't be dumb. And he's a fascinating story, you know. Never thought he'd play in the league. He's in his 14th year. He's been with seven teams, signed every place he's gone as a backup, and every place he's gone, he's ended up a starter. Often because they talk about, they actually have a term called the Fitzpatrick curse, because somehow he ends up starting. I mean, he ended up starting for the Jets four seasons ago because Geno Smith got punched down the locker room by a teammate. He ended up starting at the beginning of this season for the Bucks because Jameis Winston got into that thing with the Uber driver. These are not your typical reasons
no.
why you become a starting quarterback. And I knew I needed, and I wanted Andrew Luck because I knew he was very bright. I'd heard him talk. I know he graduated from Stanford in 3.5 years. His dad got me, you know, in contact with Andrew. And I knew I needed an African-American voice in the book. And I felt like the guys in the league currently, most of them are pretty, who are starters, most of them are pretty young.
Right.
And they haven't had that much experience. I've known Doug Williams since his rookie year in Tampa. I hate to admit I'm that old. But, and I know how smart, people miss how smart Doug is because he's got that big Louisiana accent.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really smart. I'd known him since 1978, and I knew he'd be terrific. And he was. So that's how I sort of put my group together.
You know, I want to start talking to, I think actually that in itself, as odd as this sounds, because everybody wants, you know, you could say household names, because that does help to sell books.
Sure.
But I tend to think you have a better chance, as it turns out, I think it's true, to get to better insights, different kind of inside stuff with guys who aren't necessarily at the top of the profession. If that makes any sense. And you mentioned Brady. Like I said, I'm not even sure you know, he's the name, but I'm not sure how much you're going to get out of him. And
right.
This is a nice mix of folks who've had some success, obviously, or in the case of, as you say, Fitzpatrick, who everybody loves to disparage, but has somehow carved out an identity that has gone on forever and ever. And so I dare say, to that extent, this sort of mix probably served your purpose better in terms of trying to get stuff that's different than what people might have expected.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I, as I said, I also think that the best stories usually come from guys who've been blooded in some way.
Yes.
Now, everybody's lost. You know, no athlete hasn't suffered defeat. But like you said, Tom Brady has been in 8 Super Bowls. So am I going to cry a lot? Or are readers going to cry a lot about the 3 Super Bowls he didn't win? And Rodgers, of course, look, he's dating Olivia Munn. How bad could his life be? Or he was at the time.
Right.
But the guys that I worked with have had, as you said, some success. Flacco's won a Super Bowl. Andrew Luck was the number one pick in the draft. Alex Smith, to me, is a fascinating story because he came out of nowhere to be the number one pick in the 05 draft, drafted ahead of Rodgers, by the way, if people don't remember that.
Rodgers does.
And then was a complete bust for most of 6 years. in San Francisco. And went. He dealt with five offensive coordinators, three coaches, and it was only he was getting ready to leave and become a free agent and try to find a job, basically, when Jim Harbaugh came to town and started playing catch with him. It was during the lead up to the lockout in 2011, and so Smith was using the facility. Even though he wasn't planning to play in San Francisco the next year, he's waiting for the offseason to start. And Harbaugh came in and said, hey, let's play catch. And they started playing catch together every day and started communicating the way you do. And Harbaugh said, how would you feel about staying here? And by then, Alex was like, yeah, maybe that might be okay. Harbaugh talked about running basically a read-pass option offense, although back then I don't think anybody called it that. And Mike Nolan, who was Smith's first coach with the 49ers, says, looking back, if he had set the offense up the way Alex had run the offense under Urban Meyer at Utah, Alex would have been successful right away. And as Mike says, hindsight's 20/20, but nobody was running that offense in 2000.
No, for sure.
So, and then, of course, he gets hurt. Kaepernick comes in. They go to the Super Bowl. Kaepernick's the quarterback, so they trade him to the Chiefs. He has great success with the Chiefs, but they don't go to a Super Bowl. And Andy Reid decides, can't blame him, I think I might draft this kid Patrick Mahomes, even though I have a good starting quarterback. This kid Mahomes looks pretty good to me. And Alex knew the night Mahomes got drafted that he was being drafted to take his job. And yet he spent most of the 2017 season mentoring Mahomes, trying to teach him about playing the position in the NFL. And as Andy Reid said to me last spring, the things that Alex Smith did for Patrick Mahomes, you can't repay in money. And that tells you the kind of guy Alex Smith is, which is why his injury is so much more devastating.
Well, you know what's interesting? Let's stick with that for a minute, because it's one of the fascinating quarterback subjects for me. You have a number of very successful quarterbacks who basically pride themselves on, I ain't helping anybody. I don't care how I don't care if I'm first.
Best example.
Exactly. Ballot Hall of Fame. That's just not what I do. Brett, you know, Favre was the same way, allegedly. Favre was like, no, I'm not going to help the next
right.
guy. And then you have clearly this case, as you lay it out very nicely and in complete fashion, that in Alex Smith's case, despite what he knew, he apparently did pretty much everything that Mahomes, you could say, and Reid, actually, could possibly have asked, even though he knew that, you know, it's only going to potentially even hasten the fact that his days are numbered there, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's 100% true. And Alex and his wife had Mahomes and his girlfriend over to dinner one night a week, and they talked a lot of football, obviously. And you could see them at games, you know, sitting on the bench together and talking. And Alex has this habit before he goes back on the field. He likes to throw one pass before he goes in to take the offense on every possession. And the guy he would throw that pass to was Mahomes. And that just because they were so close, that it made perfect sense. And I think it says a lot about who Alex Smith is. Joe Flacco, who's a very good guy, I think has had a little more trouble dealing with that this year with Lamar Jackson. And, of course, the funny story is on the night of the draft, Flacco's one of these guys who, you know, he doesn't sit there. He never watches, like, any of the talking head shows on TV or anything like that. He watches football. But on the night of the draft, Dennis Pitta, his old teammate, was visiting him in Baltimore. His family was up in New Jersey because the kids were all in school. And Joe says, you know, if I stay up, I stay up till we pick and then I go to bed. Well, the Ravens kept moving back that night. They were, I think, first 16th and 18th and then 25th. And so he stays up. They draft a tight end named Hayden Hurst at 25, and he turns to Pitta. He says, I'm going to bed. And Pitta says, ah, come on, Joe, seven more picks. You don't have the kids here to get up with in the morning. Seven more picks. So Joe, all right, fine. So he texts his wife, Dana, and says, hey, we took a tight end. Talk to you in the morning. And he didn't want to call her because they had a newborn baby and he was afraid he might wake her. So they watched to the end of the first round. And as you remember, Goodell walks up and says the Eagles have traded their pick to the Ravens. And with the first pick, with their pick, the Ravens take Lamar Jackson, quarterback Louisville. And Joe looks at Pitta and goes, what just happened? And Pitta says, I don't know. And at that moment, the phone rings, and it's John Harbaugh. And he says, hey, Joe, we got you a tight end. And Flacco says, John, you're not calling me at midnight to tell me that we drafted a tight end. And the next morning when he talked to Dana, she said, what does this mean? And Joe said, well, I'm not really sure, but it certainly means that everything's changed. Because these guys get it. You know,
that
Mahomes was drafted to replace Smith, and Lamar Jackson was drafted presumably to replace Flacco.
John Feinstein is our guest. New book, Quarterback, Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League, available at bookstores, online, ebook, every way possible, everywhere. Before we let you go, a couple things I want to run by you on other subject. Well, it's really, Cousins isn't another subject. He is a quarterback in this league.
And he is in the book. Doug Williams being one of my guys,
right.
I was talking to him constantly about their quarterback situation last year. And what he made clear, here in Washington, all you heard on radio talk shows was, should we keep Kirk, or as
right.
Bruce Allen called him, Kurt, or should we not? And it wasn't a question. He was going. He didn't want to play for Dan Snyder or Bruce Allen for another minute. From the time they had a chance to sign him for $45 million guaranteed dollars for 5 years after his first year as a starter. They refused to do it. They franchise tagged him twice.
Right.
And he was leaving no matter what, unless they franchise tagged him one last time for $34 million a year, which even they weren't going to do. And so it was a topic of debate throughout the season here in Washington. And Doug's attitude was, I got to go find a quarterback because Kirk Cousins is not going to be my quarterback next year.
So from the time you've been around him, from your observations of his time in Washington, who is Kirk Cousins? Because as odd as this sounds, 13 games into his first season here,
mm-hmm.
we're still trying to figure it out.
You know, my honest answer is the old Bill Parcells line, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
He's been a starting quarterback for 4 years. I think his record right now is exactly 500. With his 3 years in Washington and now the 6-6-1, he might be one game under, but it's right around exactly 500. I think that's who Kirk Cousins is. He's not a bad quarterback. He's a good enough quarterback that if you have a very good defense, which the Vikings certainly have had, or have appeared to have, certainly did last year, you can win with Kirk Cousins just as they won last year with Case Keenum. Case Keenum's not a great. I think Case Keenum and Kirk Cousins are similar as quarterbacks, and the Vikings were 13-3 a year ago with Case Keenum as their quarterback. I think Kirk Cousins is very capable of leading a team into the playoffs. Whether he's capable of leading a team to the Super Bowl, I'm not sure, because he does make mistakes. He tends to make mistakes at critical times.
Yeah, that's the
and he's as nice a guy as you'll ever meet. I'm sure you've already experienced.
Yes, we have. We've had him on at least once, maybe twice. I'm not sure, and had. He's very affable. You're 100%
yeah,
right.
Affable is a very good word.
Speaking,
he's not going to say that much. The most honest Kirk Cousins has ever said was when he went to Scott McLuhan on the sideline, not realizing there were cameras right there after they pounded the Packers on a Sunday night, and said, "How do you like me now?" That's the most honest thing Kirk Cousins has ever said.
Yeah, you don't get that from him. It's all pretty very carefully cultivated and filtered for sure. Speaking of affable. Bob Knight is rearing his head again to a certain extent in that, and maybe you saw it when it first came out, but it is now out in wider release, the 30 for 30 called Last Days of Knight. I assume you've seen it, although you have not. Okay.
Nope.
Have you?
No interest in it.
Because?
Because I was told by people who saw it in advance of the full release that it was a lot of rehash of what happened back when Bob got fired. My feeling about Knight at this moment is he's 78 years old. He's been retired for 10 years. Leave him alone. I don't think there's anything new you can say about Bob Knight. Bob Knight was terrible to Neil Reed. We didn't know that. We saw the video back in 1999 that Ron Felling leaked to CNN. Bob Knight had a terrible temper. Holy cow, I never knew that.
Right.
Steve Alford was asked at the Final Four in 1987 if he had read A Season on the Brink, which of course he had. The whole team had read it. They had told me stories about passing the book around with the cover taken off on the airplane to point at certain lines, from moments that they all remembered. But Steve sitting up there at the Sunday press conference with Knight right next to him, he's not going to say he read the book, because the next question is going to be, what'd you think of it? So his answer was, no, I didn't read it. And the reporter who asked it said, come on, really? You didn't read it? And Steve said, I didn't need to read it. I lived it.
Yeah, I remember that now, actually, yes.
And this is what, that's my feeling about this latest 30 for 30. I don't need to watch it. I lived it.
Well, I think, I would suggest you still give it a shot if you on a day where you get really bored and you don't have anything else to do, because largely you did live it. Largely, I semi-lived it. And yet, I still thought, what I thought was effective was really the attempt to humanize Neil Reed and to sort of pursue basically whatever happened to Neil Reed and the impact that the thing. I actually think it's more illuminating about, I think it's more about him than it's about Knight. And the one.
Well, but ESPN isn't promoting it that way, are they?
No, they're not, because they're going to go with what sells. But
the only player in college basketball right now is Zion Williamson, if you watch ESPN.
That's a very good. And Duke, even though, by the way, Duke did lose a game, right?
No, actually, no. That was just fantasy stuff. They didn't actually lose. They can't lose. They're going to win the NBA title this year.
That's what I thought. No, where was I going? On Knight or on
Neil Reed?
On Neil Reed. The one, I think, flaw in the approach was there's a little bit, an awful lot of really my reporter's journey on it, and that can get a little bit, you know, self-serving. You know, the old, I went through this, and all I wanted was to get to the truth. And I was like, well, I kind of prefer just tell the story. And if you want to tell the Neil Reed story, or you even think you've got some new stuff on, you know, how Knight was handled at Indiana and some newer interviews with some folks who have not surfaced before, just make it that, not about how, well, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, I just mind my own business, following that story and trying to get to the truth. And I think at that point, then
I'm suspicious of all reporters who put themselves into the story unless there's no choice.
Yeah,
sometimes there's no choice.
That's true. That's very, very, very good point.
I mean, if you read Season on the Brink, you know, I'm not even there.
Well, that's true.
I think the best when you read any Bob Woodward book, he's not there.
Yeah.
And he's the best reporter I've ever known. But, I hear what you're saying about Neil Reed, and I know Neil Reed's life was tragic, and the way it ended and the fact that it ended so young is tragic. But, again, I don't know. I just look for fresher stuff at this point in my life, and I really do think it's time to leave Knight alone.
Well, that part, you could certainly make that argument pretty effectively, and you do. Quarterback is the new John Feinstein book. It's out everywhere. Is it at newsstands? Do newsstands even exist anymore? I assume in New York.
You know, that's a great question. I think I still see them in New York.
That'd probably be the only place.
Yeah, it might be the only place.
I don't even think Chicago has newsstands anymore. Sad is what it is.
The last time I was in Chicago, which is almost a year ago now, hard to believe, but I don't remember. I walk a lot when I'm in Chicago. I don't remember seeing a newsstand.
I guess it's not surprising, but it's kind of
it's
kind of
the world we live in.
For some of us, I don't want to sound old. We're going to sound old if we lament this too much.
I hate to tell you, pal.
That's very true. Best of luck. I'm sure the book's doing great.
Very nicely so far. Thank you.
Excellent, and we'll be in touch.
I appreciate you and Justin managing to get the three of us hooked up.
Absolutely. Anytime, as you know. Thanks, John.
All right. Happy holidays.
Same to you and yours. Take care. John Feinstein on his new book, Quarterback. I mean, that's the short part of the title, Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League. I think we would agree on that. Interesting emails have come in responding to a couple things that Mr. Feinstein had to say. We'll do a shorty segment in the business, as we like to call it. Actually, we can cheat a little bit because Ben Gessling has been moved to 455. Much more on the Minnesota Vikings there. But a couple things that Feinstein had to say about the Vikings quarterback situation has struck a nerve. That's next.
It's a Purple Friday on The Fan, presented by the Greater Twin Cities Honda Dealers.
Holiday wish lists aren't just for the kids. Grown-ups have to have their own wish lists, and with all the driving you're going to be doing this time of year, I'm betting reliable car could be at the top of your list. But here's good news. You don't have to ride the North Pole to get one. Just go to see our friends at Chevy. They're the leaders in reliable cars. In fact, they just took home the J.D. Power Dependability Award for the third straight year. Chevy's dedicated to delivering vehicles you can count on year in and year out. They're working hard to give you the reliability that you need. Don't forget to check out Chevrolet today.
Hi, this is Matt Gadberry, Vice President of Magnum Companies. We are a growing local carrier based in Coon Rapids, and we're proud to be veteran and family-owned. Magnum is growing, and we're looking for freight handlers, as well as local and regional drivers to join our team. Magnum offers great benefits and top pay, including overtime. You'll feel at home at our state-of-the-art facility. Staying true to Midwest values, we offer a comfortable balance between work and home time. Call Doug at 763-780-7544 or drivemagnum.com to start a conversation. Drive your success at drivemagnum.com.
KFAN, total traffic.
From the Holiday Station Stores Traffic Center, here's a look at the roads. Good news on northbound 169, they cleared a crash at Highway 7. On the crosstown westbound, approaching Highway 100, we've got a stall blocking the right lane. Traffic is heavy from Lindale. Eastbound 494, slow from East Bush Lake to Penn. Still have an accident. Westbound Highway 36 at 35E on the right shoulder. Traffic heavy from Highway 61. That's Traffic on the Fan, sponsored by your closest 88-octane fuel station at mnfuels.com. The next time you fill up your tank, use 88-octane fuel. It's an upgrade from regular 87-octane, giving your engine a boost. Plus, it costs less. Look for the yellow 88-octane sticker at the pump or visit mnfuels.com for a station near you.
I've been to so many places. I've seen so many faces. But I don't seem to learn nothing. Nothing at all. Sure, I've been around.
Ben Gessling will join at 4:55 this evening. Top 5 at 5 will be moved to 5:20. We'll get an injury update. Maybe both of those segments, certainly. I'm sure Mr. Gessling will give us a couple of things on that. Emailer Todd Feinstein says, Case and Kirk are very similar. I don't know whether to start burst out laughing or crying. It's actually a pretty good line. I don't think he meant it literally that they play the game the same way. I think the intimation, and this has been the debate all along, really, from the start of this whole process, is are they really about equally effective if you give them a chance to play the position? You know, whether they do the jobs differently, and they most assuredly do. We know Keenum doesn't have Cousins' arm. We know Cousins doesn't have Keenum's elusiveness or ability to sort of make up the play on the sandlot. And I understand that also can be a double-edged sword. But that's really what, I mean, as much as we've talked about the coordinator thing, you can make the argument that job one for your new offensive coordinator, what's his name?
Kevin Stefanski.
Kevin Stefanski. S-T-E-F-A-N-S-K-I, I believe. Stefanski. That... leaving aside pleasing Zim about the running game, that the number one job, really the number one job, the most important, the most crucial job for this young man is getting the best out of Kirk Cousins. Now you could say, wait a minute. If you spend, and again, we know the money's the money, but it counts. If you commit $84 million guaranteed to whoever was on the market, in this case it was Cousins, that may not ensure that you've got one of the top three quarterbacks in the league, but it would seem to suggest it's somebody who doesn't have to have the best coaxed out of him. You know, that's like, well, you got to emphasize this and de-emphasize that. And I understand that's part of the frustration, I think. You like to think at that level, it's like, well, no, he'll adjust. The quarterback will adjust to whatever system or situation he's put in. But the fact of the matter is, he's not a great quarterback. So... no matter how much, you got to almost get it out of your head how much it cost you to get him. He's already here, and the money's already spent. So then you're back to, how can we feel better about that investment? We feel better about it by finding ways to maximize what he can do well and minimize what he can do poorly. Now, if in the end he can't help himself against good teams in key situations but make the big turnover, I don't know that, you know, there's anything that that Bill Walsh or the greatest coordinators of all time or greatest play callers of all time could do about that. I some of that is it's just going to have to be Cousins playing better because he has regressed dramatically over the course of this season, and he's had recently a couple of his Well, he had a good game here against Green Bay, right?
Yeah, he was very good.
He was very good. We almost called it his redemption game because the week before, the Bears game, he was dreadful.
Yes.
The pick six was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was an awful throw. It was a throw that maybe Mitch Trubisky makes as a second-year guy, or young guys who don't know any better.
But if it's against the Vikings, they'll either drop it or they'll catch it and fall and not house it.
Still one of the most uncanny and perfectly, I mean, it was almost appropriate given how bad the Vikings' defensive players are individually and collectively at getting turnovers and doing something with them. That your guy, what's the linebacker's name?
Eric Kendricks. In this instance that we're talking about.
Think about it. One of the savviest quarterbacks in the league who prides himself on, you know, he doesn't make every play well, but minimizes stupidity and stupid plays, might have made one of the stupidest plays of his career.
I'd say it was.
Where he just, inside our 10, just flings the ball sideways to just so he can't get sacked, because he knows if he gets sacked, they're not going to be able to kick a field goal. And instead, the ball ends up in the hands of Kendricks, who is so shocked by it that he bobbles, stumbles,
jumps
needlessly, because the ball was coming down to him.
It was coming right to him.
And everybody saw pick six, because, you know, all the other players, I don't think Kendricks runs like a 3.8 40, but
no.
All the other players were in the wrong direction, and he was going to have all this steam going the other way.
It was stunning.
And he did what he did, but we digress. But the whole Cousins, unraveling the Cousins mystery, that's where it goes, because this could be, I'll tell you, man, this could be a long 3 years if you don't figure that out. If it's going to end up being almost another version of what it was in Washington, even with a better team, that you win some, you lose some, you kind of mess around 500, a little better than 500, nobody's going to be very happy. I don't think about that. Are they?
No, that wasn't the intent of this whole thing. The way I remember vividly when they signed him, or maybe even before the season, somebody that we had on, because we had obviously a lot of people on to talk about Cousins just generally, and somebody said it best, I can't remember who, in terms of the Feinstein thing, that they're kind of similar, Keenum and Cousins. The whole point of the Cousins thing wasn't because they thought Cousins was Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady.
No.
I think they said they're trying to raise the floor of their quarterback play, because Cousins isn't going to be way up here, but he's not going to be way down here. He's kind of going to be in the middle, and then he's going to go up more often than he's going to go down. You know what I mean?
That was the intent.
And
the question was whether there has not been to this point enough separation. And stop emailing me about on the pace to get the most yardage or second most yards. I don't give a damn about yards. I really don't, especially anymore. Yards don't mean anything to me.
Yards are easy now.
Making plays when you need to make them and avoiding the bad plays when you need to make them. I don't know if there's an analytic for that or not, but we certainly can see it. And that's the problem, is there's not been anywhere near as much separation as clearly the Vikings thought that there was going to be. And that gets back to what we've talked about for several days. This offseason objective also has to be about fixing the offensive line as well. One more pause. We got to talk a little bit of music briefly when we come back, because 50 years ago today, 50 years ago today, a song made its debut at number one on the pop charts. We'll discuss that when we return.
You're listening to Borrero. Borrero. This is The Fan.
Join The Fan, the Vikings, and the United States Marine Corps Tuesday, December 18th, this coming Tuesday, all the way through. Power trip to Bumper to Bumper, 5:30 to 6:30. Our Toys for Tots drive at Fleet Farm in Lakeville. We'll be there all day with special Vikings guests throughout the day. You can donate an unwrapped toy. Be entered to win Vikings prizes. KFAN.com for info.
December 14, 1968, Marvin Gaye scores his first U.S. number one single. With the song you're listening to now, I heard it through the grapevine. I think the title song to this program, or the opening song to this program, was his seventh number one. I think what's going on was his seventh number one. We can double check that. I might have, I might be off a number two, but this was the first. 50 years ago today, started a 5-week run at the top of the charts. So it was also his first UK number one single in March 1969, written by Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. Of course, the song was first recorded by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. Gladys Knight and the Pips did it as well. So there you have it. Brought to our attention by a couple of listeners, which we very much appreciate. Bumper to Bumper is the name of the program. We're here until 6:30 tonight. Ben Gessling will join in about 8 minutes or so. And we also have scheduled the Top 5 at 5 move to the 5:20 Sports Fix, which will give us a chance to catch up on a number of different sports-related stories as well. I now, in the wake of our discussion early regarding the exasperation, apparently, that the head coach had with the writers for having the audacity to ask impertinent questions, not impertinent, pertinent questions about his change at offensive coordinator, that people would be fine with me being critical of Zim in this case and pushing back as well, as I think both of us have, regarding this dismissal and the way the last few weeks have been handled in general, if we'd ever praised Mike Zimmer on this program. And I, you know, there are just times where you just shake your head and you go, if you want, for the sake of your argument, out of your frustration, to pretend that over the course of the time that Zimmer got here and rebuilt things, especially defensively, that the host of this program never or rarely praised Mike Zimmer, I can't help you. I can't do anything about that. I you know, can I be rather acerbic? Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the approach. But the notion that we didn't, over a period of time, celebrate a lot of the changes that Zimmer made, some of them obvious, some of them maybe more subtle, even really from the moment he got here, is just, it's just stupid. It's just not true. And you're either pretending to misremember or you're doing it deliberately, which is even worse. There's been plenty of, on several levels, not just the way he went about building or rebuilding the defense, but the, frankly, the approach that he took and that was, that we talked about, was rather needed given the condition that this team was left with. So there's no law that says you have to agree with my own view on the way Zimmer handled this, whether you're talking about the dismissal or even his being unhappy with some of the questioning. It's a free country. Everybody can come to a different conclusion. You can't come to a different conclusion just because you want to regarding whether there's ever been any praise of this regime, and especially, really more this coach probably than Spielman, because we've done it plenty of times. You just don't want to remember it because now you're frustrated for whatever the case may be. It's just silly. It's just you got to come up with something better than that, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't remember any praise last year when they were 13-3. Talking about pushing all the right buttons defensively, all of those things very rarely came up.
I mean, look, was there some criticism the way it ended? Yeah, because it was, I don't think anybody, there were not a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say that. There were probably a lot of people who thought we were going to go to Philadelphia and win. You did. After that first drive, a lot of us said after that first drive, man, they're going to steal the whole damn thing. And then the bottom dropped out. And was there some pushback there? Yeah, because it was not a competitive performance the rest of the way. And there's always going to be questions. And as you get better, you're going to just like Zim, you're going to grade on a tougher curve is what you're going to do, because then the expectations. You think Zim's expectations haven't gone up on the basis of what happened last year? Why the hell do you think he's doing what he's doing? So the idea that there was never, God, you guys never gave Zim. I'd be fine with you criticizing him. Now, you never gave Zim. There may have been that one time you gave him credit. It's just dumb. I tell you what, a guy who's willing to praise, but also I think raises some pretty good questions regarding an ongoing subject regarding about the offensive line, is going to join us next. Ben Gessling covers the Vikings. He will give us his view, maybe even his prediction of what he expects on Sunday, a game that I think most of us agree, whether the Vikings have to win it to make the playoffs or not, they still have to win it.
Barrero. Bumper to bumper with Barrero. On the Fan.
Hopefully the top five dogs will be okay. We're moving it to the 520 Sports Fix. Had to do some juggling from a scheduling standpoint today when John Feinstein became available at about 4 o'clock or so, and to help maybe that segment breathe and give Ben Gessling proper time, he was kind enough to agree to move to right now. He is on the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline as we speak. Before we get to, I want to get to your insider here in a minute, but before we do that, I mean, you could slice this up a number of different ways in terms of what the goals, the most important goals of the new offensive coordinator might be. But to me, it is, it really has to be close to the top of the list, getting Cousins back to a place, whether it's, you know, emphasizing some plays over others or circumstances over others, back to a place where it might become easier once again to understand why the Vikings were as willing and interested in investing, literally and figuratively, to the degree they did in this particular quarterback. That's got to be at the top of the list, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, when you look at what has gone wrong here recently, it a lot of it has been around Kirk Cousins in one way or the other, whether it's been turnovers or whether last week at times where it just didn't look like he was able to process necessarily what was happening in front of him, and whether it was pressure coming at him or times where he wasn't pressured very much and it seemed to be that he was maybe giving up on plays a little bit early. And I think he even alluded to this a little bit, kind of feeling out of sorts after the game when he talked about, I need to be better at playing off schedule and being able to extend plays and that sort of thing. And you don't necessarily do that if you're sitting there saying, I trust my offensive line completely. I mean, there are going to be times where you have to do it, but I think some of that was him saying, I need to take things into my own hands a little bit. So whether it's them helping him do that or whether it's as much as they can shoring things up in front of him, I'm not sure how much that's going to happen at this point, but you do have to get him to a point where he is playing representative football. Otherwise, you're probably not going anywhere. There's no question about that.
No one knows, because we have no track record with this coordinator yet. We've got the first game Sunday, and we may still not have a track record because that's not a real large sample size. But based on your gut and talking to folks on a daily basis at TCO and elsewhere, what do you expect might be the biggest change that Stefanski is going to try to sort of usher in his debut as the offensive coordinator?
I would tend to think some of the things they did well with Pat Shurmur last year will come back, and I think some of that is probably the screen game. We've seen, I guess, snippets of that, but I think we could see more of that. I think you could see Dalvin Cook probably playing a little bit more of the role that Jerick McKinnon occupied last year, where it's not just getting him the ball on handoffs, but it screens, even lining him up in the slot at times. We've seen them dabble with some of that stuff, but not to the degree that I think they could and not to the degree that they've been able to use with some success last year. So I think some of those things, I think if Pat Elflein and Brian O'Neill are probably your most two mobile offensive linemen, trying to get them out, either it's on screens or some of the zone runs where you can get them to the second level. I think a lot of that stuff you could see them go back to. And I think the other piece of it is Kirk Cousins has been pretty good when he's been on play action, dropping back, yep, not just coming out of the shotgun. So I think we could see some of that. We saw the Vikings do it last year. We've seen Cousins do it well in the past. And you know, just the thing with the play action, if you can get it going
especially if you're under center, it has probably a little bit more effect because it looks more like some of your runs. And I think they've tried play action at times, but if people don't necessarily worry about the run or at least the possibility of a run, I don't necessarily buy that you have to run with great volume to set up play action, but you at least have to make it look the same. And I think the Seahawks do that really well. The Patriots do that really well. So the Vikings have seen examples of what it looks like when it's done well, and now they have to get some of that going. I expect we could see certainly some of that on Sunday.
In terms of how receptive DeFilippo was, either from the court, from the quarterback, I guess you could say other assistants, the head coach, what do you know? What have you learned? I mean, was he viewed as a guy that, hey, he's kind of, it's the way he's going to do it, and that's how some of these coordinators are, and that's sort of how we accept that he just wouldn't consider other ideas or other options? I guess I'm trying to figure out whether how much of this is a flaw in his approach or how much of it, given that this is the second time this head coach has had difficulties with an offensive coordinator, and the other one was highly established in terms of his bona fides and his credentials, that it's more that in some ways Zim might have unrealistic expectations of what he might expect from guys who, you know, who he gives the keys to.
So here's the commonality, I think, between Norv Turner and John DeFilippo, and they come from different generations, certainly different offensive schemes, but they are both guys that I think believe very strongly in the way they have been brought up and the system that they run. I mean, we saw John DeFilippo, I think, try to come in here and do some of the things Philadelphia was doing last year with some of the route combinations and run pass options and all of the kind of new age stuff that we've seen kind of spread around the NFL. And I don't know that it was that he's not receptive to other things, but I think he thought this is what we're going to be able to do best, and this is what I'm going to be able to work with best. And I think the other big piece of this was, I don't think he believed that there were a lot of things that they wanted to do, that Mike Zimmer maybe wanted to do, that would be feasible with this offensive line. I think he felt like this offensive line has enough problems that there are only going to be certain ways that we can get around that, and one of them is going to be throwing the ball an awful lot and trying to get the ball in the hands of our playmakers before something goes wrong, and one of them might be trying to get the ball to players on the perimeter with, you know, ways of delivering the ball that aren't necessarily running it. I mean, we've seen some outside zone, and probably they could do more of that, but I don't think he felt like we're going to be able to run the ball up the middle very often because we just don't have the guys that can win along the line of scrimmage. I think, you know, rightly or wrongly, and you could maybe argue that he was kind of, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where you say, okay, we can't do this,
yeah,
and you don't try it, and then it kind of goes downhill from there. But I don't think he believed that they could just line up and run it down people's throats because they don't have the personnel to do it.
The key, I want to read the, for me, one of the key sentences from your insider that I have in front of me. It remains to be seen whether interim offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski can devise a scheme to mitigate some of the run blocking and pass protection issues that have plagued the Vikings all season, but there's a case to be made that the issues along the Vikings offensive front contributed to the philosophical rift between DeFilippo and Mike Zimmer. I think you've nailed it there, that to a certain extent, you could even say that reasonable minds can disagree about the best approach philosophically, but the reason that disagreement is taking place, or that there's even has to be this much discussion, is you've got a fundamentally flawed front on your offensive line that is forcing you to have to sort of think differently or tweak or mix or match. And you could say that's true of all lines, but certainly that's a big issue for this particular group that leaves any coordinator or any head coach in the position of, all right, here's what we can do to get the best out of this and minimize that. And no one knows the answer, Ben, but there have to be lots of questions because many things clearly do not come easily with this group.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that was the big problem. I think both Mike Zimmer and John DeFilippo can see the issue there. I mean, you know, they both can watch what's in front of them just as much as anybody else can, and obviously more so because they're the guys who pay to do this every day. But I think, you know, they both saw the issue along the offensive line, but the solution for both of them is different. You know, John DeFilippo, as we talked about in terms of what he wanted to do, Mike Zimmer, I think, is saying, okay, well, we still have to try to run the ball. There's still ways that we can at least get this to a point where we can set other things up off of it. You can kind of work through game flow better if you're able to run the ball. I think for Mike Zimmer, that's as much of it as anything else, is you wear down a defense, you control the clock, you keep your defense off the field. There's sort of a cumulative effect beyond just what may happen on one given play if you can run the ball effectively. I mean, if you're going run for a yard, incomplete pass, punt, that doesn't do anybody any good. But I think his thought is, okay, if we can eventually wear people down, then we can reap the benefits later on in the game. So I think both of those guys saw the same issue. They were just coming at it with different solutions, kind of from diametrically opposed ends of the spectrum. And I think, both guys that believe in what they believe in, and it just wasn't going to be a good fit. And ultimately it ended how it did.
Ben Gessling covers the Vikings for the Star Tribune. You also, in this insider piece, kind of go back to the offseason and how a number of moves have sort of left us in this position. It has created, one could argue, at least some, if not all, of the vulnerability, or maybe even greater vulnerability than the Vikings had a year ago along the offensive line, when, by the way, they ran a lot. They certainly, I think they were second in the league. You can correct me on that, but I know they were towards the top in terms of how many times they ran. And I guess we should probably go through some of those things, even though, again, we got three games left, and maybe this change is going to change everything. I guess that's, you can't rule out that possibility. But you remind us of the draft. You even remind us of the Berger, the way the Berger story played out, that in effect may have also contributed to making a tough situation even more critical as we've gone through this season.
Yeah, I think the Joe Berger situation is a big part of this. We've harped on it, I think, to some degree in the Star Tribune. I know Andrew Kramer and I have talked about it at various videos, podcasts, whatever. But Joe Berger played all but two snaps last year. He had started at center. He'd started at left guard. He'd started at right guard. He was a guy that you could basically plug in and say, okay, this guy is going to be able to stand up and do the job in a number of different places. He was a smart player. I mean, a guy that went to Michigan Tech, and I think is going into engineering now. I mean, one of the smarter guys I've been around in an NFL locker room, and he's a guy that I think got what they were trying to do. He was a favorite of Tony Sparano's, and he was a guy that was open to coming back. He had initially said he was going to retire, but kind of said, you know what, I'm in good shape. I had so much fun last season with the run we were on. Why not give it one more shot? So I think if they had come to him with a representative offer, he might have done it, and ultimately that didn't happen. He decided to retire. I think that was a big one. I think, Jeremiah Searles was a guy along that line that not going to be a guy that is a complete game changer for you, but another piece that you could put in the mix. And somebody just pointed out to me today too, they signed Brian Witzman from the Chiefs early this season, ultimately didn't put him on the field and cut him. He's starting for the Bears now. And you had a few of these little pieces. They're not sexy moves by any means, but they would have been cheap ways, I think, to maybe help some of the offensive line issues and, try to, just at least put a little bit more of an affordable solution in place than what you've ended up with and what you may have to do again going forward, given the number of issues you still have and are going to have in the future.
You also remind us that after the four picks after the Vikings selected a cornerback, Mike Hughes, surprising a few people, perhaps on the offensive staff for sure, that the New York Giants, Pat Shurmur's new club, grabbed a guard out of UTEP named Will Hernandez, who has started all 13 games for the Giants. Because as I recall, at the time, the conventional wisdom was there had been a run on offensive linemen, I think specifically guards, and we didn't want to reach at that point for someone that isn't going to be worthy. I know, again, you could say it's an easy second guess now, but the fact of the matter is it sounds as if at least one other team was able to find a useful player along the line of scrimmage, ironically enough, a guy, Mr. Shurmur, who used to be with the Vikings.
Yeah, and that's the important point, I think, here, is that it's not just that there was a guard that went right after them, because we can all play that game.
Right.
Well, they should have taken this guy. I mean, we all do that, and it's silly to some degree, but Hernandez, to me, sticks out because when John DeFilippo came in here, one of the things they talked about was We want to keep all of the run language the same, the way we call things, the way we do a lot of things. We don't want to change all that much because we were successful at it last year. So the idea, at least at the beginning, was this scheme isn't going to be all that different. So it follows to me at that point that if Pat Shurmur thought this guy fits in his scheme, there's probably a pretty good chance he fits in yours if you're the Vikings. And they made the decision that they made to take Mike Hughes. I know there were, as I mentioned in the story, there were certainly people on the offensive staff that were banging the table pretty hard saying, we need to draft a guard. We need to get, if it's not a guard, something along the offensive line, but probably a guard given the fact Joe Berger is gone. And they take a corner, and certainly Mike Hughes looked promising before he got hurt, but he's not here to help you right now, and the offensive line remains a big issue. So Will Hernandez, to me, is one of the ones that sticks out just because it seemed like he would have been a guy that you could have plugged in and maybe made a starter. I think the guard position is probably – I mean, they have a lot of issues on the offensive line, but I think the guard position would be at the top of it right now, and maybe that would have been a way to – mitigate some of that if they had taken him at the end of the first round.
And you mentioned also you get back to the decision that maybe made out of necessity to move Remmers from his customary spot right tackle to right guard, and he's allowed, according to Pro Football Focus, Zim's favorite site, 36 allowed pressures, tied for fourth most in the league. Let's get to what you expect will happen on Sunday. Is this going to be the salve that this team needs, a good, comfortable, convincing victory to at least open the door to? We got a chance to maybe get a little hot here and figure some stuff out on the fly and take our best shot at it, or what do you expect on Sunday?
Yeah, I do think they win. I mean, the Dolphins have won one game on the road this season, and they're probably going to be without Xavien Howard, their best corner, and this has been a team that's given up a lot of big plays. They've got good pass rushers with Robert Quinn and Cameron Wake, but their defense has thrived mostly on turnovers, and Howard leads the league with 7 interceptions. So if you don't have him, I don't know that they're going to be able to contain those receivers quite to the same degree. I mean, they have a very young secondary, so I think the Vikings have some opportunities there if they're able to protect Kirk Cousins well enough to make things happen. And I just think at home, they're a fundamentally different team at home. They've been very hard to beat other than the Buffalo game and I guess the Saints, but I think that will help a lot of their issues. I mean, this stretch of the schedule that they just went through is it was one that at the beginning of the season we all said was going to be the most difficult thing in front of them, and it certainly proved to be that way. I think they need, obviously, to go into this thinking you have to win all three of these to get in. I think they're all winnable, especially given the fact the Bears are probably going to be resting starters in Week 17 or at least have not a whole lot to play for. So it's a good time to kind of reset things. It's a good time if you're Mike Zimmer making this move to potentially be able to say, see, the problem's fixed. I was able to make the change at coordinator and all of a sudden we're playing a lot better. Obviously the competition level is different and that has to be factored into it. But I do think they win it. I think I picked 24-14 for the paper, and I think they'll have a chance to take advantage of a soft stretch of the schedule here, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Is there an all 22 way out of the box here regarding what has seemingly become the strategy on going after the Vikings' really two best offensive threats, the wide receivers, bracketing them a lot, double teaming that a lot? That can't be unprecedented, but it seems to have been largely effective. So is there an antidote to that? Is there an X's and O's way to not just make them pay elsewhere, but to still get the ball to two guys? I think I saw the stat from you today. Somebody had today that Diggs has not had a drop this entire season. I don't think I hallucinated that, but in any case, he's clearly one of your playmakers. There's not any doubt about that. So is there a way to get to that, even if this team follows suit with what, you know, certainly Belichick seemed to do, and that Seattle kind of glommed onto as well?
Well, yeah, I think there are still ways to do it. I mean, if they're going to double team and triple team people all the time, then you probably say, okay, we have to go somewhere else with the ball. But the thing both of those guys do, you mentioned Diggs not having dropped the pass. I don't know that's that off the top of my head. I think that's, if I think back through it, I can't think of him dropping a ball necessarily, but both of them have great hands, but the thing that both of them do really, really well is they're sublime route runners. They are able to beat people because they're able to get so much separation with the way they run routes. So you can double team them, but they're still sometimes able to find holes in that. And I think back to the Patriots game, the Patriots had a double team, I think, with both of the McCourty twins on Adam Thielen. He put a move on them to get open, and Kirk Cousins put a ball just out in front of him. It was the kind of diving catch that we typically see him make. It went off the end of his fingertips, but it was one of those that it wasn't because the route wasn't there. I think he did enough to get himself open, and I think there are ways to do it going forward, but you know, you have to, at the same time, if they're going to devote that much attention to those guys, you have to say, okay, we can go to other places. And that's where you run into issues. The obvious solution would be the guy you took in the first round a couple of years ago, Laquon Treadwell, to be able to contribute more. I don't think that's going to happen to the point where he's going to become any kind of a major factor. I mean, Dalvin Cook certainly can do more. But, yeah, I mean, your offense is going to be based primarily in a perfect world on Diggs and Thielen, and you have to find ways to get them going because we see what happens when you can't.
Thank you, as always. We will look forward to Sunday's game. I know you'll be there with bells on, and we'll chat next week. Thanks again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
I appreciate it. That's Ben Gessling on your Minnesota Vikings, his prediction, and also I think a lot of good analysis on why this team is in the position that it is. And by the way, that position is still can make the playoffs and probably will make the playoffs, in part because it doesn't appear that anybody else is going to test them or challenge them all that much. Top 5 at 5 becomes the 520 Sports Fix about what?
I have a great quote from Joakim Noah, why things didn't work out for him as a New York Knick, and great audio from a very civic-minded Phoenix resident about her Phoenix Suns that is going viral. It's some pretty good stuff. I'll say she's an elderly lady who's not happy with the direction of the club.
Don't we play them next?
That's part of the reason why we're playing it.
What if we lose?
This lady will be upset, I think.
It's a Purple Friday on The Fan, presented by the Greater Twin Cities Honda Dealers.
Holiday season and the holidays are full of can't-miss events. Parties with friends and coworkers, family dinners, get-togethers. You want to make sure you don't miss a minute of the festivities, and our friends at Chevy are here to help get you where you're going with some of the most reliable vehicles on the road. Get behind the wheel of the cars that have taken home the J.D. Power Dependability Award for an amazing 3 straight years. Chevy's the only brand to earn J.D. Power Dependability Awards across cars, trucks, and SUVs for 3 straight years. You got to get with Team Chevy. You have to check them out. Test drive a Chevy today.
Just in case you missed it, it's the top 5 sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, driven by Borton Volvo.
Better late than never. Not too much of a delay for the top 5 at 5 dogs. Maybe make them work for the food a little bit.
Although it gets dark like 2:30, so they've probably been thinking for 3 hours that it's time to eat.
And no snow in the forecast. The snow we have on the ground is expected to melt. And that means the prospect of a not white Christmas is, I don't want to say definite, but likely. Not pleased about it. Not going to lie to you.
No, you don't take that well. No. We've talked about this for many years.
You welcome it. You love it.
It doesn't bother me.
It doesn't offend you the way it offends me.
Yes. Yeah. You're a traditionalist.
I try to be.
You're a romantic.
Yeah, despite my reputation, but no one else seems to care. So now we're just going to look brown and muddy and ugly. That's great.
And that's not what the song said.
Well, I don't think so.
The song said dreaming about a white Christmas.
By the way, people have asked us, why have we not weighed in on the Baby It's Cold Outside controversy? It's because we covered it a year ago. I mean, it's not, and we probably weren't the first then. It's.
Oh, is that back?
Oh, it's back. Yeah, it's back.
I didn't know that was
time.
Back. Yeah, we
back.
Talked about it last year.
Literally, I think it was last Christmas season. We mocked it. We ridiculed it. And I don't have much juice left on it, to be honest, because I think the development is this year, there actually were a few radio stations that pulled it.
Oh, boy.
And then they got so much heat. They got heat for playing it. Then they got even more heat for pulling it, and in a couple cases, including, I think, San Francisco Davy, they turned around and said, the people have spoken, we understand some people are frustrated by it, but more people want it, and so we're cognizant of the issues, but we're going to go ahead and run it. Maybe we'll get to it again next week, but that's why we've kind of, we're not afraid of it. It's just that I think we spent days on it last year, and I'm just kind of exhausted
by it.
It
went a while, yeah.
To each their own, man. If it offends you, that's fine. I'm not even gonna pretend to argue with you. The notion that it cannot be played is because it offends you is preposterous for me. Sorry. That's it. That was the position then. It'll continue to be the position. Because when there are a couple of songwriters here who then they did the sanitized version.
That's what happened, yeah.
And it's the old deal of interpreting through the 2018 or 17 or 18 lens language that is written then. I think the song was written in the 30s or 40s or maybe the 50s.
It had been a while.
And it's such a losing proposition. It's so stupid to do that. But that's largely why this has become one of those, you know, super woke controversies that we're all supposed to be offended by. Go ahead.
Remember when everybody was worried that Tibbs was going to sign Joakim Noah and bring back the Timberwolves?
I remember it well.
I think he ended up in Memphis. Does that sound right? So obviously it didn't go well for him in New York. Do you know the reason why it didn't go very well for Joakim Noah in New York playing for the Knicks after signing a $72 million contract?
I think I do, at least based on what he has revealed most recently in either a podcast or an interview. Was this the same podcast during which Steph Curry said the world was flat?
I don't think that was it.
No, not the world is flat. That we didn't land on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that was a different podcast.
I think it was. There's so many podcasts.
That's true.
So much content. So many platforms.
Does Noah have a position on whether the world is indeed flat, whether we ever landed on the moon?
Nobody's asked him that I've seen.
Or whether Dick Nixon assassinated John Kennedy.
Oh.
That's another one. Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
There's a bunch of conspiracy theories.
Joakim Noah says that partying in New York City was his ultimate demise. He joined the Chris Vernon Show. I don't know if that's a podcast or a radio show or whatever, but it's in Memphis. Here's his quote. I can look back at it and say I was ready for New York City, but I wasn't. Not just the pressure. I remember after the first game, I had 60 people in my house. I'm too lit to play in New York City. Memphis is perfect for me. They go on to write this in New York Daily News story. Noah's partying was well known among young players. They were told not to go out with him, according to a source. Asked if he also partied during his much more successful stint in Chicago, Noah said, we were lit in Chicago, but I was young, so you recover faster. Amen,
well,
brother.
Disarming honesty
from
Joakim Noah. That probably makes some sense. Now, will the people of Memphis, like, if let's say he was playing here,
yeah,
and said Minneapolis was the perfect place, would we actually be offended?
Oh, like we're not lit enough?
Because the intonation there, or indication there is, or implications,
nothing to
are
do.
That there's nothing
boring
to do
town.
Here. It's boring, and so it's easy to not be lit here. Nobody wants to come to visit me here because it's not that interesting of a place. So my guess is we would be offended by him saying, you know, Minneapolis is a better place for us.
Yeah, we would take it. We would take offense.
Yeah.
We're always on the lookout. Our antenna's always up for possible slights. We definitely would take offense to that. I loved it.
I don't think we have to worry then about, is he a fixture? I mean, how's he doing in Memphis? Is he playing
I
have no clue.
I have no idea
how
he's playing.
The team has
Memphis.
Done all right, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have to worry about us picking him up.
Chicago is a fun town when you're young, man. You can be living in Chicago.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it now.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, it'd be the opposite of when Chuck Foreman said, at least you know you still got
it.
Well, I know that I don't have it anymore.
You don't think you do?
I am well past my prime there, sadly. Phoenix Suns, we play them. They were on TNT last night. I don't know if they won or they lost. They were playing somebody.
Why? Would be the other question. Why were they on TNT?
Well, you got to put somebody on
there.
Yeah,
I guess that's true. How was Area 21 with Barkley? How was KG with Barkley?
The parts I saw were solid.
It wasn't
like the stretch we played.
He did. I was so proud of KG. The only part I saw was an extended back in my day. Right out of the Barrero back pocket. Honestly, people say I do back in my day too much. KG was doing hardcore back in my day about what players think of today as opposed to what they did in terms of meeting and practicing and paying attention. And that's the part I saw. It was very serious.
Makes sense.
There wasn't a lot of comedic back and forth. It was Garnett just riffing on the subject.
I think Phoenix was playing Dallas because Dirk just came back.
Okay.
And Dirk looks like he's 150. I mean,
painful.
It was his first game and they put him through some stuff. And
yeah,
it doesn't look good. But apparently yesterday, the Phoenix City Council was going to vote on a very murky proposal that would give Suns owner Robert Sarver $150 million in public money to renovate their arena.
Right.
And there's apparently a very active Phoenix woman who's, I guess, kind of a legend at City Council meetings. Her name is Greta Rogers. She was not pleased about it. And then they apparently were going to continue the vote very late in the meeting, and Greta took the mic and basically said, not going
to
work.
This is a little late to be calling a continuance when people have come down here in large numbers to speak to this item, which has been furtively and secretly negotiated and put on this agenda. This is Chicago politics at its worst, and it has a very foul odor. We are in the business of governing a large city for all who live here, and we are not in the business of funding private enterprise. I don't care what it is. Private enterprise in a capitalist society, and I support it, is self-supporting by its own wise and diligent business practices. Mr. Sarver has done nothing to improve this team in the 14 years he's owned it. He's never funded or bought, paid for, two or three key players, which make any sports team, professional sports team, successful or on the road to success. He's so tight, he squeaks when he walks. And you have been negotiating with this kind of person? Shame on each and all of you. And upon you, Ed, I thought your principles were higher and better than this.
I don't know who Ed is, but she certainly does.
Yeah.
It's the bumper to bumper seal of approval.
What a virtuoso on the fly appearance. That's tremendous.
I played about half. It was about a 3-minute speech that she gave. And apparently she's a bit of a legend, like I said, at Phoenix City Council meeting. She rolls in. Someone via Twitter called her the most engaged Phoenician that maybe they've ever seen.
That's outstanding.
Last year, Rogers spoke out in front of the council after they voted to use half of a $15 million tax boon earmarked for parks to pay off city debt from city-owned golf courses. Here's what she said on that occasion. You gave the middle finger salute to the citizens of the city of Phoenix and then stuck the finger in the eye. I want this money repaid in full. In 2012, she called the council and city out for 24 months of dithering and arguing. Get on with this. And then she always says, thank you. And it was, the video is like, it's the whole meeting, so it's hard to put the whole video on the show page.
Right.
But it's worth, just look for Suns, a Phoenix fan dunks on Suns owner, and you're going to find it.
What I liked was, now, I don't know, maybe she is, comes from, you know, she's cut from the cloth of, we don't give any of these teams anything ever, which I tend to believe can be a little bit short-sighted, but
then she
talked
about the success of the team.
Well, that's my point. That's what I was leading to, is that at least in this case, it's she linked it with, it was the implication was, well, give me some sense that this owner is doing anything but playing with us to steal money from us by how he goes about attempting to put together a basketball operation, and maybe I'm willing to go along with the idea of a private-public partnership. But when the owner does such a bad job of attempting to put something together, why should we be co-conspirators in making life easy for him? Yeah, it was very well done.
It was funny. And well, I love how she was bitter because apparently they were trying to delay the
continuance.
And a lot of people, I guess, had been there. Obviously, stadiums are a high-profile deal, right? They get a lot of attention.
Do they show how the committee or how the council is responding to, or are they
I think
red-faced? Are they chuckling? They must be used to her by now, I guess.
I think they kind of know her, yeah.
Does that mean, by the way, did they do the continuance, or did they listen? Tour.
No, I think they did do the continuance.
Okay.
And apparently it is, literally I learned about this 4 hours ago, the Phoenix Stadium deal.
Yeah, right.
I can't say I'm up to speed on it, but it was pretty funny.
We better beat them tonight. Don't we play them tonight?
Isn't it tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow? You might be right. I can't. I've lost track.
Tomorrow night, 8
tomorrow
o'clock.
Night.
Yeah, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
We better win that game. I mean, it's going to look even more embarrassing with all the attention nationally that this woman is getting.
Yeah, Greta.
Bringing to, you know, everybody's further attention just how putrid. How many? I think Phoenix has 5 victories.
Did they win last night? Did they beat Dallas? I thought they had 4, but I'll double check.
Okay,
it's 4 or 5.
It's 4 or 5, yeah. And that means they've lost a bunch of games.
I think it means the team that's in front of them, and I can't remember. The team that's in front of them in the Western Conference is actually closer in terms of wins and losses to the number one seed in the West as compared to them. Wow. That's how bad they are compared to the rest of the Western Conference.
That certainly tells you something right there.
PJ Fleck was officially awarded a one-year contract extension today. Board of Regents formally approved it. It lengthens his contract through the 2023 season. His original five-year, $18 million deal has been extended twice. The first one coming November of 2017.
Right.
So it's been extended by a year twice. He's going to make $3.6 million in 2019, which reflects an annual increase of $50,000 a year. That's redundant, which is part of his original contract. So he is signed up for the contract states the employment term will be until 2023. We know that that could be...
could be sooner, could be later.
For a number of different reasons.
Can you... you're closer to this than I... Would you say the contract extension was more a reward for finishing with two out of three victories and two very nice victories, or for continuing the Gophers' tradition of suspending players just in time for the bowl game? Which of those two?
No. No.
Had that one in your pocket for a while, huh?
I'm very unhappy with myself that I didn't deliver it on TV.
Yeah.
Very unhappy
you're upset?
With myself, yeah.
We could probably go back.
You think we'll go retape it?
Yeah, we could maybe retape that.
For the record, because there are a lot of numbers floating around here, 4-22 is Kirk Cousins' record versus teams with winning records. 5-24 is the Phoenix Suns' record.
That's all I have to say.
For the 2018-19 season, just for the just in case you're getting those two confused.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down. Okay. Definitely have to. So PJ will make $3.6 million this year, Dan. What place out of 14th does that put him in the Big Ten?
How much?
$3.6 million.
I'm going to say at $3.6 million, well, we know he ain't in Brahms' class yet. I'm going to say that puts him...
You're really pleased.
Well, financially.
Financially, you're right. Yeah,
I can't argue.
I think
it.
He got seven. That'll be fun.
I'm going to say, how many teams are there in the Big Ten now?
14.
14 teams. I'm going to say that puts him at number 8 in the league.
No.
Higher?
Lower.
Lower than 8?
According to this story, according to our, I think it's Randy Johnson on the Star Tribune, he is 11th highest paid. In the
no
Big Ten.
No kidding.
11.
That's interesting.
Big Ten Network, baby.
Wow.
Fox TV,
this goes
man.
To show you.
I mean, the money. That's why I said with the Brom deal, people are always like, oh, he'll go.
Yeah.
Purdue can't afford him. Every Big Ten team can afford any coach they want when it comes to football because the money is ridiculous.
Well, for those who say it's too early to reward PJ Fleck, on that basis, you should feel pretty good about the fact that he's really not that high up the totem pole within the state of, or within the Big Ten, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, he's still, that's pretty
bottom
low.
Half,
bottom,
yeah.
Bottom third.
Bottom third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
There
okay.
you go. Wild won last night. We're happy for them. They take on Calgary tomorrow. Afternoon game, if I remember correctly.
I think that's right.
12:30.
I'm looking at it. 12:30 right here on the fan. Yeah. By the way, Texans at Jets on the plus tomorrow at 3. And there's also Saturday Night Football on the fan. Cleveland at Denver.
Oh, we're at that time of year, aren't we?
I didn't realize we started this soon.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, Vikes-Miami at noon. New England at Pitt at 3 o'clock on the plus. And back on the fan at 7:20, the Philadelphia Eagles and the are at the Los Angeles Rams. What if
That's
your guy, what if with your one of your favorite quarterbacks, Carson Wentz, now out, right? At least this week with a fractured vertebra.
Right.
What if Foles does it again? What if this is the start of a Philly push and they get themselves right back in the wild card race and they do it, they start it by stunning the Rams in Los Angeles?
Then we'll know that it's not Frank Reich and it wasn't John DeFilippo. It was all Doug Peterson.
That's probably true.
Pushing the buttons last year. By the way, tonight, 7 o'clock, big one in the FCS, North Dakota State versus South Dakota State. FCS
That's
semifinals
tonight?
At Fargo Dome. Yeah, about an hour and 20
Why
minutes from now.
Why don't we have that on here?
Good question.
What? Where's Abbott? I mean, usually that's the kind of game that would be right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Contractual situation? You think it gets sticky and complicated?
Well, I know there's not a national broadcast of it.
Oh, there isn't?
No. There will be. A lot of times we've
Who are we playing?
It's North Dakota State, South Dakota State. It's Bison Jackrabbits. It's a huge game.
That's massive.
So they played once already this season. South Dakota State's really the one team that has pushed NDSU this season. Other teams have in the past, but there you go.
And we play NDSU next year, right?
SDSU.
I mean, excuse me, SDSU.
Yes.
Is that our first game?
Good question.
We're going to win that game, aren't we?
Think so.
We have to win that game, don't we?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think we would.
So top five at five, better late than never. We turned it into the 520 sports fix. We still have a good chunk of time to get back to the A sports topic, your Minnesota Vikings preparing for the Sunday encounter against the Miami Dolphins. More on that next.
This is Barrero on The Fan.
The season of free is in full swing at T-Mobile. And this time, we're going big. Like the biggest screen you'll ever see at T-Mobile big. Because we're giving away 50-inch Samsung 4K TVs. You heard right. A free 50-inch TV delivered in time for the holidays when you get one of the latest Samsung phones and add a line. Buy a phone, get a free TV. It's that... Whoa.
Where is it?
We're here for the free Samsung TV.
Hey, careful. How'd you get in here? This is a recording studio, guys. You have to go to the store.
Oh. To T-Mobile.
Okay, if you missed out on Black Friday, then this is your second chance. Score a free 50-inch Samsung 4K TV, but only if you get to a T-Mobile store right now. Because from the looks of it, this deal isn't going to last long. Come join us at T-Mobile before it's too late.
At participating stores, offer fulfilled by Samsung with online redemption code. Qualifying credit, new line of service, timely redemption, and phone finance agreement required. Two new lines required for new customers. One offer per account.
The Fan and Green Mill are trying to hook listeners up with all the great food they need for their next at-home tailgate party. Head to KFAN.com, make the keyword contest for your shot at a $150 Green Mill gift card for your tailgate.
I've got a lot to try to squeeze into this next segment, including an officiating controversy that has just reared its head in a very unique way. I think it's got some talkability to it. But before we do that, a little bit of... we have a breaking news sounder. I'll use it because we don't have a breaking absurd news sounder. I guess you could say it might be done as material. I just want to read you a couple paragraphs and kind of let it speak for itself. And this is not out of the Onion. An academic conference on sex with robots has been canceled due to a backlash against a proposed speech by Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's former advisor. Mr. Bannon had been due to speak at the International Conference on Advances in Computer Entertainment this month in Montana. But protests from activists and fellow speakers forced the cancellation of the event. Its organizers said. A linked conference being held alongside that event, the International Congress on Love and Sex with Robots, was also canceled over the outcry. A statement on its website said, quote, from the organizer David Levy, since the arrangements being made for both conferences were inextricably intertwined, we have had no alternative but to postpone the Congress on Love and Sex with Robots. Here's the kicker. Here's the key to this whole piece. The sex robot gathering has been postponed until January 2020, when it will be held in Las Vegas at the same time as a pornography convention.
Excuse me?
He added. How good is that story? On so many levels, it's just so, so rich. And so, in this case, true. I don't think it's an Onion piece.
Not fair to the sex with robots convention, though.
I don't think so.
That's the thing. It's like they're just innocent bystanders in this whole thing.
Yeah.
They're just trying to have their convention concurrently, and they get roped into this. That's not right.
And then
everything's political now, even sex with robots.
Their link with the pornography convention, you just have to love it. All right, officiating controversy before we get to some Vikings. Are you familiar with a Twitter handle called NBA Referees?
I think so, yeah. I think I've seen it.
It's, I think, the official site of NBA refs. I didn't even know they had a Twitter handle, but they do. And they posted this. When did they post this? 12:34 p.m. today. So about, 5 hours ago, give or take. Here's what they tweet. Why is it hard to educate fans about the rules? Here's what we're up against. From last night's game, real Chris Webber was incorrect here. This is a foul as the defender makes illegal contact with his knee to the thigh of the offensive player, causing him to fall to the floor. Now, if you hear, if you play the soundbite, it's the TNT coverage of it, and Weber flat out saying, bad call, followed by a bad technical called on the player who received the, in Weber's view, the foul call, the wrong foul call as well. What's interesting to me is, and I'm looking at a tweet from Rick Bunnell, who's covered the NBA forever. He writes, playing off of that NBA referee's tweet, between social media and L2M reports, that must be
the last two minute reports.
Yep. NBA refs have never been under more scrutiny. Understandable they have started sticking up for themselves in a public manner. That is what fascinates me about this. Is this the inevitable new frontier that because, and now we're in an age where we expect more and more betting opportunities to take place as well. Now, this was a foul call like in the, I want to say the first quarter. Hardly a play that could be called all that eventful, although I think it did lead to a technical foul shot from James Harden. But my guess is you're going to see that. I'm sure there's pressure where these refs are saying, man, we got to stand up for ourselves a little bit, especially with all the focus that's now on us under the auspices of the NBA's new approach. Does any other league offer up their own version of the last 2 minutes in terms of the report? Has anybody else come close to that?
No.
Do they do it in hockey?
I'm trying to think. I don't believe
so. Do they do it in football?
Well, if that was the case, it would have been the last 6 minute report, and we would have been vindicated on
a number of times.
Well, every game,
pretty
probably,
much every game.
But especially the Seattle
game. Except for
game,
the Green Bay game.
When your guy jumped over.
Except for
yeah,
the
that
Green
one
game.
That one we would have lost.
We might have lost that one.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not surprised. And but what's interesting is how frontal it is.
Well, they're sick of it.
Basically, refs, part of the job is allegedly we just got to take it.
Good luck.
And during the game, they largely do. They may fire back a little bit. But now it looks like maybe this is the beginning of a new trend where they go, no, when the analysis is this blatantly wrong, at least in their view, they're going to fire back because otherwise they feel like they're more under siege than they have ever been. So I'd be curious to know how often this is going to start happening and whether, as I said, other representatives of officials in other sports are going to feel like they need to start doing more of this. I don't know, maybe they do already. The call, did you watch the play? I thought Weber was wrong. I thought it was a foul. I thought the call was correct.
Well, I'm watching it now. Yeah, it was Kuzma.
Stuck his leg out.
Yeah, and Harden went right through his leg,
yeah,
and that was the deal.
It was a foul, I
yes.
think. Now, again, it's not the end of the world what Weber said. It's his opinion. Obviously, a lot of it's opinion, and he's seeing it in real time even before he has a chance to watch it on replay. But it looks as if the refs are about ready to declare war and say, fine, man, we're not going to sit back and take this in the social media age any longer. The question then becomes, how much does it get escalated? How dangerous can it be when you have folks attempting then to do what whoever's representing the league here is doing? And what if you start having individual referees doing exactly
yeah.
the same thing?
Well, I would also say, is it easier for the refs to do this as well? Because the flip side, if they're going to show me a video tonight with Kevin McHale on the call saying this was a bad call, are they going to post that and say, Kevin McHale nailed it, we blew that one? You know what I mean? Are they going to also admit
that's true
when the refs got it absolutely
yeah,
wrong
right.
and then compounded it and made up another, you know, because that happens too.
That's true.
And I'm sure it's easy for us to say, because the refs, in a way, they are a pretty protected class because guys get fined if they even talk about them, right?
True, yes.
Players
yes,
and coaches
yes.
and things like that.
Yes.
So, I get their side of it here, too, but it's also, they're not perfect. I mean, we talk about that
no.
all the time.
No.
And so, if they're going to start firing back like this, I feel like it's going to escalate the other
where
way as well.
Where does it end? Yeah, that's the concern once you start going down this road, exactly where is it going in? Because this is about, I mean, this is pretty frontal.
When, oh, yeah. when the tweet the guy is, in the tweet for
why,
sure.
Why is it hard to educate fans about the rules? Here's what we're up against.
Good luck.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty frontal on
oh, yeah.
On C Web in this particular case. So my guess is they must have gotten together and
they're
said we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore as well. In fact, it's a thread because then the next tweet is and real quick, Chris Weber is incorrect here as well. This is a correctly called foul as the defender makes contact with his shoulder as he is moving illegally into the offensive player's space. These are obvious fouls, and fans deserve accurate analysis. So it's on now, And where it ends is where I think the commissioner probably has to have a little bit of nagging concern about that very issue.
I'm looking forward to at Big Ten refs tagging Mike Grimm 3 all basketball season and all football season.
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
That's the next step.
How much fun would that be?
It'd be tremendous.
Oh, God, it would be, from a Twitter standpoint, a Twitter entertainment value standpoint, it would be fascinating. It would be really outstanding is what it would be. Let's get caught up. I think we need to, right? And then we'll come back, and we've got a full half hour to get back into much about Vikings and this tumultuous week, where it's headed. It's been exhausting on so many levels. It'd be nice to actually get to a game, and that's the question. What do we expect in the game? Booth at KFAN.com. Back in a minute.
You're listening to Borrero on the Fan.
Register for your shot at a pair of tickets to see Aquaman in the IMAX Theater next weekend, only at the Minnesota Zoo. KFAN.com, keyword contest, Aquaman, IMAX Theater.
Interesting toss-up email to get us into the Vikings discussion. Emailer Mark, the Vikings and their fans seem a bit overconfident going against the Finns. Vikes offense only put up 10 points against the Pats, while Miami put up 34. Food for thought. Are we actually... How is it humanly possible that... I'm not talking about the players, but that media and or fans, after what we have witnessed, could be overconfident. We've dropped to 6-6-1. We were about as feeble offensively as you possibly can be. I know that was on the road, and we said Miami's not a great road team. They're coming here. They have beaten a couple of teams. Have they beaten two or three teams that have beaten us? They beat New England, albeit on a miracle play. They did beat them.
They got the victory.
They beat the Bears.
31-28.
And did they beat a third team that we lost to?
Sadly, they beat the Buffalo Bills 21-17.
Yeah. Everybody but us beat Buffalo, right, basically?
We account for a quarter of Buffalo's victories this season.
Overconfident at this particular juncture. I have no idea. I do know this. I'm excited it's a noon start, which means it's only a one-hour edition of sermons. I don't have to go the usual. I've been going 2 hours forever, and I'm not, and they ain't giving me overtime.
And you can tell you're worn down.
Well, yeah, I think it's been 6 consecutive weeks or something like that, close to it, between buys and primetime games and 3:25 games. This week I get to go 1 hour from 9 until 10 o'clock, and I will guarantee no snarky bowl coverage.
I don't think you can guarantee that.
No, I guess I can't. You're right. Well, something might come up on it.
I was going to say the... what's made it doubly tough with the 9 straight 2-hour tours is that for like 5 of them, you haven't been able to talk about Purdue and Jeff Brohm.
That's true.
Because they haven't been playing.
Well, he got his money.
So you haven't been able to bring that up.
I wonder how long he'll actually be with Purdue. My guess is he'll stay 2 more years and then he'll end up in the NFL. By then, everybody will, like USC will want him, UCLA will want him, Notre Dame will want him.
No.
And at least 3 NFL teams will probably be willing to just hand him the keys of the whole operation.
You think so?
I think it's inevitable, isn't it?
Some might think that.
Based on what we've seen. Emailer Steve, regarding the robot, the cancellation of the Sex with Robots convention because the keynote speaker. I mean, how perfectly 2019 is this whole story on so many levels?
Everything,
including your keynote speaker was, what's his name?
Steve Bannon.
It's just great. He writes, does Steve, longtime listener, I had to do a double take or listen when I heard about the sex robot convention. I thought of a couple of questions. Are these Russian bots and not internet trolls? And Trump wants to know if it's possible to grab the pots by the...
Careful.
Bill Clinton wants everyone to know that he did not have sexual relations with that robot, Miss Metallica Lewinsky. Not bad. Yeah, for it's Friday night, we have to have a little fun.
Could I ask you a quick follow-up?
I guess.
At what point do people, and I'm not saying this is
Are you going Power Trip Morning Show
No. It's not about the sex robots.
Oh, okay.
At least not yet. Yeah. I might have a follow-up about that as well.
I was afraid of that.
A couple of people texted wondering, how do you get refunds for the convention? I mean, does it just go to the next year? I mean, are you able to get a refund?
It's a great question.
Not sure. It's something I think people, they didn't make very clear.
They need to follow that up. Yeah, there's no doubt.
A lot of people made arrangements. I mean, to get in and out of town, it's expensive to go to these conventions.
And where do we say it was?
I can't remember
where
you
said. Somebody in Montana.
Oh, that's right, Montana.
But now the beauty of it is, because, you know, every porn convention is in Vegas.
It is, every weekend.
You move everything. That's true, actually.
It's like the Country Music Awards. There's the ACMs, the MCAs.
So Vegas is the natural spot for all this, including the Sex with Robots convention.
On Steve Bannon.
Yes.
What is our streak of speaking engagements that have been canceled that were featuring Steve Bannon? I'm not saying it's right.
No.
We've talked about this a million times.
Maybe 9 or 10. It's got to be a bunch.
It bugs me that we can't have... Obviously, we know what he's about, and we know all of those things, and we know what he said and things like that. But every month, we've got a Steve Bannon appearance canceled under heavy protests. Like, at some point, don't you just give up?
Well, what you do...
Or stand up.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Either you stop scheduling him...
That's what I mean.
You start getting the message that there's no point... you're going to have to cancel it once people figure out that even at a Sex with Robots convention, there are certain standards that must be upheld.
It wasn't even that convention.
Yeah, no, that's the beauty.
It was down the hall.
Down the hall. You can't even make it up. That you're going to end up, you know, going with the pitchforks. Or you say, we're standing tall. We're standing tall for people who want to have sex with robots down the hall. We're gonna keep Bannon here. That's, I think, a very, very fair question.
This is the end.
Only in the region I grew up in, I was born in, Gary, Indiana area, northwest Indiana, not that far from Chicago, a place that's, ever since the steel mills closed, or virtually closed, has been turned into a disaster. Unemployment's through the roof, crime through the roof, Gary jokes, I get them daily, even at this late date. But you could say only in Gary or the Gary area could one imagine without really, you know, being all that shocked, this particular piece of crime news. A Whiting, Indiana man, that's another small town not far from Gary, has been convicted just within, I think it was yesterday or the day, it was Thursday, so it was yesterday. Of stealing a railroad bridge and selling it for scrap. A whole bridge. He just bit by bit and piece by piece apparently took apart a bridge. Now, in fairness and savagery, the bridge was no longer being used, but still a bridge. Still sitting there. And so apparently, little by little, this guy, Kenneth Morrison, 68 years old, found guilty of interstate transportation of stolen goods. 2013 and early 14, he dismantled Hammond's Monon Bridge and sold the metal in Burnham, Illinois for $18,000. The whole bridge. Now, he didn't do it in one day. Apparently, he took it little by little. Federal prosecutors said that Morrison knew the city owned the bridge, having his request to dismantle the bridge rebuffed by the Board of Public Works, so he just decided to take it anyway. His lawyer's saying, man, it's abandoned. But that wasn't good enough in this case. The Monon Bridge, built in 1910. It's a drawbridge, and he just took it.
Do you remember
the whole bridge? I remember the name, but I don't remember the bridge. I'm familiar with the Monon term, but not the bridge itself. So,
and they, whatever happened to the, was it Memorial Auditorium, your place in Gary?
Yes.
And that's no longer there?
No, well, there's, I think...
Is it like a facade
it burned
of
down,
it?
And I think there's still like a couple of walls are still up. The rest of it is a...
I wish I could have seen that
ruin.
Place.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Hearing
very
you talk
nice
about
place.
It.
Well, it was weird. I mean, I don't know how many people have grown up or gone to sporting events in which it's literally an auditorium where the stage... is set up on the court is set up on the stage. And you have most, so in other words, 85% of your audience is in front of you, like you're going to the theater.
Right.
And then behind it, there was a grandstand as well. So it was highly unusual. I think maybe it's not that unusual. Maybe back in the day, there were those sorts of auditoriums everywhere. It certainly served its purpose then. So are we feeling good? Let's go back to the pick segment here. Did we pick I picked the Vikings. I think I picked Miami to cover.
We all picked the Dolphins to cover. 7.5 was our spread. It's 7
are
technically.
Are we convinced the Vikings are going to win?
I am.
I'm not convinced they're going to win. I picked them to win. But I am at a point where I say this not to be difficult. I would not be shocked at anything that takes place on Sunday. I really would.
I don't think that's a bad take. I think that's shrewd.
I just don't think. I don't think it can be at this juncture because it can.
What can you rely on right now besides a really good defense?
Well, the defense you could say still. Although Miami's offense isn't. I mean, the QB's been playing pretty well, though he's hobbled. I think he's going to play. What's his name?
Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill.
He gets hurt a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play through it. I don't know how effective he's going to be. You can't count on any or all. I mean, the beauty of it is, again, is that by doing what Zim did, he created more anticipation than there otherwise would have been, right? It's almost like here's something else to kind of chew on and to debate, right move, wrong move, how did he do it, are we kidding ourselves, etc. To that extent, he shows a remarkable, one could say, marketing acumen, that he has people more interested in this game than I think they otherwise would be.
Well, we saw earlier he was going to put you tweet that on his T-shirts for the foundation.
That's true.
So maybe Cousins has rubbed off on him a little bit.
It's very possible. We got some Fox 9 News headlines.
A North Minneapolis mother calls for an end to the violence after her son is caught in the crossfire. Some details on a shooting there. Also, Minnesota lawmakers are shaken by a sexual harassment report talking about the behavior at the state capitol. And that's a couple of the things that are coming up tonight. Fox 9 News at 9.
Sooner or later, they're all going to have to get in on it. They're all afraid of the story. The weather, because it's the antithesis of weather terror. The fact that we may not have a white Christmas, that the snow we have might melt, and it's just going to be brown and muddy. That's not Christmassy here in Minnesota. Just it's not. You're fine with it, though. You live in your little, that's because you grew up in that Edina high rise. And so it didn't even matter up there that you don't even see the snow. You're up so high.
I'm all for safe driving conditions for everybody.
Listen,
let's all just get to where we're going.
Okay, Uncle Gardzi.
Just want to make sure everybody gets where they're going. We can watch videos and see the snow.
It's a Purple Friday on The Fan, presented by the Greater Twin Cities Honda Dealers.
Yeah, speaking of driving conditions, we know that the winter can get a little tricky out there, whether it's making sure your battery is ready for the cold or making sure you've got wiper blades. Good opportunity to handle all that snow, by the way. Good opportunity this weekend with the weather going to be nice. Great time to change out those wiper blades and make sure they're ready for the imminent snow-nomies. O'Reilly Auto Parts is the place to do it. Brands you know, prices you love, helpful people every step of the way, and locations everywhere, including 97 here in the Twin Cities. O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices, every day.
KFAN. Total traffic.
From the Holiday Station Stores Traffic Center, here's a look at the roads. Good news on northbound 169. They cleared a crash at Highway 7. On the crosstown westbound, approaching Highway 100, we've got a stall blocking the right lane. Traffic is heavy from Lindale. Eastbound 494, slow from East Bush Lake to Penn. Still have an accident. Westbound Highway 36 at 35E on the right shoulder. Traffic heavy from Highway 61. That's Traffic on the Fan, sponsored by your closest 88-octane fuel station at mnfuels.com. The next time you fill up your tank, use 88-octane fuel. It's an upgrade from regular 87-octane, giving your engine a boost. Plus, it costs less. Look for the yellow 88-octane sticker at the pump or visit mnfuels.com for a station near you.
You know, my honest answer is the old Bill Parcells line, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
He's been a starting quarterback for 4 years. I think his record right now is exactly 500 with his 3 years in Washington and now the 6-6-1. He might be one game under, but it's right around exactly 500. I think that's who Kirk Cousins is. He's not a bad quarterback. He's a good enough quarterback that if you have a very good defense, which the Vikings certainly have had, or have appeared to have, certainly did last year, you can win with Kirk Cousins just as they won last year with Case Keenum. Case Keenum's not a great. I think Case Keenum and Kirk Cousins are similar as quarterbacks. And the Vikings were 13-3 a year ago with Case Keenum as their quarterback. I think Kirk Cousins is very capable of leading a team into the playoffs. Whether he's capable of leading a team to the Super Bowl, I'm not sure.
It's the Bumper to Bumper Show Wrap.
John Feinstein joined us earlier in the program. You just heard a snippet of our conversation, which was mostly about his new book, Quarterback. He speaks to five NFL quarterbacks, one of them retired, the other four still playing, and they're not all stars by any means, which I think makes it kind of unique in his approach. Alex Smith among them. I guess there's one Super Bowl winner among them, correct?
Joe Flacco. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Doug Williams.
There were a number of other quarterbacks that he discusses, though. Kaepernick comes up a lot. He confirmed to us that he spent time with Aaron Rodgers, and originally there was a chance Rodgers was going to be one of the ones featured, but ultimately Aaron expressed concern that there might be some stuff about his family. I think the quote from Feinstein, from Rodgers, according to Feinstein, was, you're not going to get anything factual from them or truthful from them, something to that effect. Shots fired there. That was at about 3:55. It'll be on the Barrero Conversations podcast as well.
Already up there, yeah. If you subscribe, you've already got it.
You already got it. It's even better. Please do subscribe. You can easily subscribe. Go to KFAN.com, go to the Barrero show page, and almost immediately you'll find links to all of the podcasts that Garzy and I are involved in, and a couple of the other ones as well. And once you're subscribed, then it comes directly to you. It was a good conversation with John, as usual. In addition, Ben Gessling joined us just before 5 o'clock, and we laid out a lot about the Sunday game and a lot about a piece he wrote regarding, that you kind of reap what you sow when it comes to some of the offensive line issues, some of the fateful decisions this team made in the offseason that might have been different and might have even put this team in a different spot at this point where they weren't having to consider and ultimately deciding to fire the offensive coordinator. Picks at 3:30 with Gerby. Had some fun with him, as we generally do as well. Want to remind you that Purple Friday Final, as per usual, will follow us tonight. And then it's overtime with Carly Zucker. Dan Patrick will be Carly's... Oh, no, he will not be her special guest.
That'd be a good get.
Dan Patrick will follow overtime with Carly Zucker. Tonight on Fox 9, it's the return of Garzy to Enough Said. The vested one, Johnny Athletic, filled in for you last week and was got rave reviews.
That's why we put him in the spot.
You're back with me, and we have some fun with Ryan Rablin this week. Lori has some personal issues to attend to, so is Ryan Rablin this week, kind of officiating over us on Enough Said tonight at 9:30, replay tomorrow at 6:30 a.m.
Nobody loves being on TV more than Ryan Rablin.
No, that's true.
And that includes us.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
And nobody amuses himself more than Ryan Rablin, which is why it was a fun show tonight.
While tomorrow at Calgary on the Fan, it's a day game, don't forget. That's a 12:30 start. And then we've got a pair of pro football games. Saturday afternoon and evening football is back, I guess. I guess it's the rest of the way. I don't know. And then the big one, Vikes in Miami on Sunday. I've got a one-hour edition of Sermons, I'm sure. We'll take one last shot at all the pertinent issues then. We'll talk to you then. Enjoy the weekend. We'll chat at 9 a.m. on Sunday.
I love the hunt. It's all about the hunt.
Podcast of today's show, visit the Dan Barrero channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.